Hi, I'm Mike Sklenz, and welcome to Nintendo World Report's Connectivity, Episode 17. On this week's show, Zach, Danny, Patrick, and myself ring in the new year with our predictions for 2012. After that, Neil and Scott join Zach, Danny, and Patrick for a round of news and listener mail. If you're into hockey, keep listening after that section for a bonus segment. Don't forget to send us your thoughts and questions to connectivity@nintendoworldreport.com.
Hello, welcome to Connectivity Episode 17. This is our predictions show. We got a full cast here. We got Patrick Barnett.
Hello.
Daniel Bivens. Mr. Bivens.
Hello, please.
That's not racist because he's in Japan. Or wait, does it make it more racist?
Yeah, sorry.
I think we should aim to be as racist as possible.
Okay. Well, okay.
So we're going to do a prediction show. We're each going to do one, because we have four people, it might take a while. We're going to do one serious prediction, one hopeful prediction, and one joke prediction.
I'm calling that one my predonction.
Predonction.
It's a negative. It's got don't in the middle of it.
Okay, Carl. okay, so let's start with the serious, these might actually happen predictions, and we'll start with Patrick.
All right, for this one, I thought Pikmin 3 will be a Wii U launch title. No. I really think it's either going to be launch window, but I definitely think it's going to be launch title. I'm not sure.
I would agree with that. That was cool. One of my almost predictions that I thought was maybe would make, but I figured someone else would pick it actually, so I thought up something else. Yeah, that's gonna happen. Like, how, if it doesn't happen, how long has that game been in development?
I mean, exactly.
It's gotta happen.
Exactly.
I mean, what they said, it's almost done or something like that for the Wii, right? So it's like, what?
Yeah, they said. Yeah,
said
I mean,
it was almost
Miyamoto
done
said it was gonna come out.
Skyward Sword.
So it's like this shouldn't be a hard thing to make for launch, or at least launched window. I mean, for crying out loud, come on.
It'll certainly be launch window. Like, Pikmin came out, I think, like a week and a half or 2 weeks after the GameCube, and I would call that basically launch anyway.
Yeah. I can't wait to see what they do with that game. It'll be good. Maybe it'll be an upscaled collection of Pikmin's 1 and 2. No, but I hope it's 3. I really do.
It's the perfect game to put on that system with the tablet thing, and the you could draw on it, and you can just order the Pikmin around with your hand.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. No, it makes sense. Don't get me wrong. Mm-hmm. All right. How about you, Danny?
Oh, well, this has to do with the Wii U launch in general. I think that it's probably going to launch here in Japan sometime between July and September, and then have a release in North America, Europe, definitely by November at the very latest. I mean, I think that's it's kind of a safe thing to say. I mean, what? Just what Reggie was saying, like, oh, I'll tell you what, it's coming out by the end of the year. You know, so I mean, it's going to happen. So I think it's going to, at least in Japan, I think it's going to come out earlier. If you look at kind of how the past console release has been, well, at least with the 3DS, and even like DSi and stuff like that, it's kind of been trending, you know, where it comes, things have been coming out in Japan first, and then, you know, with the other regions to follow afterwards. I think they'll continue that trend with the Wii U hardware.
What do you see with price?
I'd probably say somewhere between $200 and $300, maybe even $250, because they have to stay competitive against the PS3 and Xbox 360, because if they don't, that's stupid, and it'll just be shooting themselves in the foot. It's like, yeah, of course they got this new controller, and that's definitely different than, you know, the competition out there, but man, they need to make sure that they can get this thing out, you know, out the door.
Yeah,
I would say you'd think 250 would be the smart move.
That's what the Wii launched at.
And that's what the 3DS launched at. But I'm pegging it at 300. I think that as a console itself, if it came out like a brand new console, like a normal brand new console, that like if a new console just randomly came out and was competitive with the Xbox and the PlayStation 3, it wasn't like way ahead of them or anything. Mm-hmm. 250 sounds like the right price for that console. But Nintendo's going to charge more. One, because they always do. They like to make a profit on their hardware.
Mm-hmm.
And two,
sure aren't on the 3DS.
They can put a lot of that cost, like in the user, in the consumer's mind, they can put a lot of that cost on the new controller because it's like gigantic. It's the size of an iPad. An iPad costs $500. Like, So they can make that controller, I think, gives them a little more leeway to bump the price up to like $300, I think. And they'll take that. And then probably a year later, like in 2013, they'll drop it to $250 because they can probably decrease the component cost of that thing pretty quickly because it's not like bleeding edge.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Well, you know, one thing I hope they do with the controller too, I hope they make it capacitive touch so it's not
you're living in a dream world.
Yeah, it's not 1999 or something, you know.
Here's a prediction that is not for next year, or for this year, rather, or probably for maybe 2 or 3 years, but I wouldn't be surprised if down the line they released a Wii U Tablet Plus, like Motion Plus. Yeah. It'll be, instead of Motion Plus, it'll be Touch Plus, and it'll be multi-touch.
Yeah, that almost sounds like...
They would totally
like,
do that, because exactly. It's almost like the Wii Remote, they skimped on the components like to keep the price down, mm-hmm. and then they ended up having to make an attachment to make it more accurate later. So,
and then they threw away the attachment and just gave us a new controller.
Yeah, and that's what they're... There won't be an attachment, obviously, for multi-touch. They'll just skip the middle step. Mm-hmm. But they want to keep the component price down.
Sure.
Because they're cheap.
Exactly.
So do you guys think it'll have a bundled game?
Yes.
Mm. I don't know if they can't do a bundled game anymore now that they had all those apps on the 3DS and they launched Wii Sports. I don't think they can not do that anymore.
Yeah, I think...
Go ahead. I think it's possible they'll do something similar, like maybe new Super Mario Brothers Mii or whatever, you know, that the demo was from E3 and stuff last year.
Whatever they already have made.
Yeah.
I don't know if they'll include a game, but I wouldn't be surprised if they'll definitely do something like maybe not a full game, but if you buy it like within like the first like 2 shipments, they'll have like a sticker on the front that you can peel off and redeem a code to get a free download game.
Yeah.
That's what Xbox did when it first came out, actually. All the games, all the systems, as soon as you connected it to Xbox Live, you got like 2 free, like really shit, like puzzle games, but still. I don't think it'll be quite that bad, but it'll be like, you know.
Remember when the DSi launched, when you bought it, you got like 1,000 DSi points.
And with,
and that buys like 2 games.
Yeah, with the 3DS, as soon as the eShop was available, Excitebike was free. Like they want, they're always going to do, I think, a promotional free game whenever a new thing like that launches because they want to drive people to the store so they know how to get back to the store and spend real money.
Sure,
that's true. All right, how about your serious prediction, Mike? Or was that your serious prediction?
No, that was not. My actual serious prediction was I'm pretty confident that Retro is going to have a Wii U launch title. We haven't seen anything.
Talking about this.
We haven't seen anything from them. Yeah, because I guess were you talking about it in this week's news segment?
Yeah.
Because they're staffing up. Yeah, I saw that and I was like, oh, here's my prediction. So it's probably already been heard on this episode, so I'll keep it short. But Retro's staffing up. There's a new console coming out this year. They haven't released anything on 3DS yet. They might put something out on 3DS.
No.
Maybe, but it's all signs seem to point to a major console launch title. The question is, will it be a new IP or will it be Metroid? Metroid.
Neil, I'm probably said Zelda.
It's gonna be Zelda. They just put a Zelda game out. And they'll never let a fucking Western team develop Zelda. Oh my god, that's the biggest joke I've heard ever. They haven't put a Metroid game out in forever, and I was probably not going to buy... I'm probably not going to buy a Wii U at launch, is my thought. I'll probably wait until it gets a little cheaper, especially after being burned on by the 3DS a little bit. But if there is a well-received, brand-new Metroid game on the Wii U at launch, I'm fucking buying one. Like, I need that shit.
I suggested earlier, Mike, maybe Retro is working on Super Metroid Returns.
Don't even. So what's your prediction, Zach?
My prediction is that there will be significant, they will announce at E3, there will be significant kind of wireless connectivity crap between the 3DS and the Wii U. And they won't just talk about like Smash Brothers Wii U DS.
It'll be able to, you think, like a little mini controller?
Yeah, well, mini controller or... there will be games where you can upload data from, you know, a Wii game onto the 3DS.
Sure, like Pokemon to Stadium.
Yeah, like they could easily do a Pokemon thing. But, you know, they could do some version of transfaring, too.
Transfaring, oh god.
I know that's a stupid word, but I can see it happening. I mean, obviously the 3DS games would look worse, but I mean, they could do that for the Smash Bros. Game.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
yeah.
you could upload your progress from the 3DS version to the Wii U and vice versa.
Do you think a Fox Team developed Smash Brothers would be good?
Fox Team?
That's Kojima's team.
Oh.
Or Fox Hound, I guess.
Oh, Jesus, no.
Yeah, probably not. I don't know.
Or maybe Fox was the name of the engine that they used. Now I can't remember, and I feel stupid.
Well, I don't think they're handling Metal Gear Rising anymore. I think that's in Platinum Games' hands now, so who knows what they're doing.
You mean Revengeance?
Yeah, Revengeance.
Kojima, man, that guy is a nut. Like,
yeah.
I don't think that's even
real
Metal Gear.
He made Boktai. I wouldn't be surprised if he came around with something weird if Nintendo can get him to do it.
I think if they get him to do a exclusive game, that will sell units.
I don't know, because the last time they got him to do an exclusive game, they got Boktai, which was a very good game, but it was clearly Kojima saying, I have the chance to make whatever I want. I'm going to make something that's fucking crazy. Like, that's what he does when you give him that kind of
power,
like control over the production of a game, where you don't say, it's got to be in an established genre, and it's got to be something that probably at least a couple million people are going to buy, and it's got to be at least decently mainstream, on the face.
You know what would be cool? You know what would be cool on the Wii U with that tablet controller? Zone of Enders.
Yeah.
That'll never happen, but
when you look at it, like, Metal Gear Solid, like, looks like the most generic, like, normal bro game on the face of it. Like, on the face of it, you're like a spy, and you're sneaking around, and you're assassinating people. But then when you play the game, you're like, this shit is fucking whack. Like, what is going on?
Yeah. I'd actually like to see they'll never do it, but I'd like to see a second, better remake of the original Metal Gear.
I think
they could do
Twin
that
Stakes
on the Wii U and the tablet could be your radar.
Oh, no, you're talking about Metal Gear. I'm sorry. I was thinking Twin Snakes, Metal Gear Solid.
Yeah, no, Metal Gear Solid, Twin Snakes.
I may be the only person that thinks, I don't know, Metal Gear Solid's pretty well revered among a lot of people, and a lot of people don't like Twin Snakes, but I think it's so much way fucking better.
Oh, it
it's
is.
So
oh,
ridiculous.
My. Oh, yeah. So there you go. Okay. So there are serious predictions. Now our hopeful predictions. These might not happen, but we really hope they do. Go, Patrick.
A new Zelda 3DS game. You said there wasn't going to be a Wii Zelda game, but I think a 3DS Zelda game is possible since Ocarina of Time was done last year. And I think it will be there.
Will it be Majora's Mask or something new?
I think it'll be something new, not Majora's Mask. Not another remake right after another.
Yeah.
Yeah,
it'll be something in the vein of. Or, sorry, go ahead, Danny.
Yeah, I totally agree. Aonuma was even saying earlier in last year, saying like, "Hey, you know, we wouldn't mind doing a Majora's Mask, but we'd like to do something else, you know, something new before we do that." So I think we can definitely see that. Whereas I don't know if they'll use like the same engine or if they would. I mean, if it'd be heavily modified to maybe even be more something like Skyward Swordish, or if they'll go with maybe some kind of like a Wind Waker-esque type of thing. You know, that's to be, who knows?
Those waters have been poisoned by the DS games.
Yeah, so I mean,
wouldn't be surprised if they have they have the Ocarina engine running on on the 3DS, and it could put out better graphics. Like, a lot of Ocarina 3D was like, they didn't increase the polygon counts too much because if they did, it wouldn't look retro enough.
Right.
And they just cleaned everything up a lot. And that engine, if you know, modified it and optimized it, it could probably make a really good-looking game
On
the 3DS. And do you guys think, if that's the case, what was the name of the team they had to do that? Was it Gecko or Greco?
Grezzo.
Do you think they would have Grezzo develop it? Because they've been known to do that with handheld Zelda games, is farm them out a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
I can see that.
Definitely.
Will it be good in that case?
Well, handheld Zelda people for a long time were Capcom.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I guess, so, you know what, though? I have a bias against 2D Zelda.
I know you do.
So that's probably fueling my bias of third-party developed Zelda, because they're all 2D and I don't like any of them.
Link's Awakening, man!
That one's all right. Like, that one's all right, but that's about...
That one drives me
I don't nice. Even like Link to the Past that much.
Oh, man.
Like,
wow, I'm you and JP Zelda should put
I didn't,
together.
Well, I didn't really, really even get into Zelda until Ocarina. It was kind of like the first Zelda game I really played.
Huh.
Well, to be fair,
so
Metroid Prime was the first Metroid game I really played.
Actually, likewise with me on the Metroid, but with Zelda, like, actually, A Link to the Past is the first one I played, and I remember just absolutely loving it. But then reading about Ocarina of Time before it came out, I was just so hyped. And then when I finally played it, I was like crapping all over the place, almost literally. And just, it was so amazing.
It's the best.
Yeah. Get into Hyrule Field and just piss yourself.
Well, yeah. It was the best until Wind Waker.
There you go. And Wind Waker is still the best.
Majora's Mask!
Yeah, let me rewind time again and do this shit again.
Sounds like fun to me.
Yeah. I actually haven't finished that game. I should finish it.
It's phenomenal. I need to.
Yeah. I never finished it either. I think I got to like maybe the third or fourth temple area, like the third or fourth dungeon, and I just stopped.
Mm-hmm.
I really I got tired of like, I don't think I was like fully, I was much younger then, and I don't think I was fully comprehending like the mechanic of the time travel thing. Mm-hmm. I don't think I really fully like could appreciate it. I think if I went back and played it now, especially, I would love to play it, but I don't really want to play it unless it's on 3DS now. I kind of want to hold out.
Yeah. I mean, I played it on the virtual console. I bought it on launch day. Yeah, I bought it on launch day when it came out in 2000. And then I had it on the virtual console for the longest time and didn't beat it until like October 2010. And my God, it's just a really amazing game. I mean, I had liked it, you know, before that, but after actually completing it, it was like, holy crap, this is actually really amazing. And I don't know, for me, just because the fact that it's pretty different than any of the other Zelda games out there, that's what really, you know, sets it apart for me. It's just a really, really amazing take on Zelda, and it's not like something that you see in all the other ones. It's not just rescue the princess and, you know, whatever, you know.
Man, now I really want to play it. I think I might bust out. I have the GameCube copy of it that was like a nice pre-order from one of the Zelda things at GameStop.
Nice. Yeah, I got one of those too. Nice.
So maybe I'll pop it in there with the Wii and play it.
I have it on N64, and this was before I thought about getting it on Virtual Console. I popped it in, put it on my TV. It looks awful. not just it looks bad, but it's so dark.
Oh, it's yeah, because it's on. You have a nice TV, I assume.
Yeah.
Shit, that's right. Maybe I should wait for a 3DS remake.
Well, no, then I got it on Virtual Console, and it looks great.
Oh well, shit. Maybe I'll set the pony up.
You know, at least I can see it. So.
Yeah, I'll just have to pony up for it then.
No, it's a good game. I mean, I'm at the first temple. I forget why I put it down, but I like it. It's very imaginative.
I've got some game. I think I have some time to squeeze a game in between now and when SSX comes out at the end of February.
Oh, you're not.
That game is going to consume my life for like probably at least 3 months. I'm going to play it every day. I played SSX3 every day for the better part of a year.
Wow.
It's that good.
All right. Danny, how about you? What's your hopeful prediction?
Well, for the sake of everyone in North America, I really hope that The Last Story in Pandora's Tower actually come out. I honestly don't think that they will.
Nope.
And if they did, I think it'd probably be something like in the summertime. Maybe about the same time frame
in
when
the dead period.
Yeah, maybe like the same time frame when Xenoblade Chronicles launched in Europe like last year, like August, mid-August, something like that. Maybe even a little bit earlier. But I mean, I've played a lot of The Last Story in Japanese, and it's just amazing. It's just a really cool game. It's really easy to get into. It's not super JRPG-ish. It's a lot of like action-oriented stuff, and it's just super simple to play. Pandora's Tower, on the other hand, it's not really an RPG. It's kind of like, it's a lot more action-y even than The Last Story. It's just, I don't know, they're both like pretty good-looking Wii games, and there's a lot of fun, and just, I think it'd be a good last hurrah, but I'm kind of doubtful for the North American releases on them, though, unfortunately.
Call up GameStop.
Yeah.
Well, if Xenoblade Chronicles is received very well, if they manage to sell a good number of those, like enough to make a little profit and justify the cost of going through it again, then they'll probably do it. But
yeah, right.
Will that happen?
That's another thing too.
which of those games would you say deserves the widest audience?
Like, would.
If Xenoblade Chronicles was still over there, and you had to pick one of those three games to bring over to the Western markets, which one would you say everyone needs to play?
I think The Last Story. I think it's easier to get into than something like Xenoblade, personally. It's not, I mean, because Xenoblade is like so RPG that it's just, it can really turn a lot of people off. The Last Story, on the other hand, it's not quite that in your face with being an RPG. I mean, yeah, it is, but it's just a little bit different. It's kind of nuanced that way. I mean, hell, they got online multiplayer for crying out loud too, which is kind of weird. Yeah, which is kind of weird, but it's still kind of cool.
Nice.
So, I mean, there's a lot of cool stuff you can do. It's definitely, it's nowhere near as long. Like, the story mode's nowhere near as long. I think it's only something like 25, 30 hours,
yeah,
40
that's
hours.
Fine with
me. Yeah, Xenoblade, it's what, like 80 to 100 if you're insane.
Oh my god.
So,
if you're James Jones, yeah.
I'm never going to play that game. I don't have fucking 80 hours to put into a game unless it's SSX.
Yeah.
All right. How about you, Mike?
My hopeful prediction is that we'll get. This kind of almost goes off my last, what we were talking about with Retro on my last prediction in Metroid, but I actually thought it up before that. I'm hopefully predicting that we will get a seriously good mainline Metroid game on the 3DS.
Handheld.
I don't want it on the
Metroid.
Wii U. I want it handheld, and I want it to look like 2D, like maybe 2D, but Samus can move between like a foreground, a midground, and a background, almost kind of like...
Mutant Muds!
Oh, actually, almost kind of like Little Big Planet, actually.
Okay.
You know how there's kind of like three planes of
right.
depth to the... It's almost like three platforming levels stacked in front of each other.
Right.
And if you put them together right, you can navigate between them. I think something like that, if you to take advantage of the 3D depth in a Metroid game... I mean, maybe it wouldn't have to be all the time, maybe just in certain rooms or something. You know, obviously, like, you'll get into a narrow column, and then it'll just be one or something. But I think that would be a really awesome way... to do a Metroid game on the 3DS, put the map on the bottom screen.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's practically made for a proper Metroid game.
It is.
And they've never made one for it. They didn't make a proper Metroid game for the DS at all.
No. Mm-hmm.
That's ridiculous that we haven't had a 2D Metroid game since Metroid Zero Mission.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that is. That is
so
true.
I'm really hopefully predicting that we will get one on the 3DS.
I'd like to see one of two directions taken with the Metroid franchise. One... stop making prequels and interquels and tell us how the story continues after Metroid 4, after there are no more Metroids. You know, maybe she can bounty hunt. Does she do that? She's a bounty hunter.
You would think,
yeah, that's
right?
True. We only focus on this one aspect of her,
right.
Or her timeline is her involvement with the Metroids.
And the other direction I'd like to see him take is, go back to when she was a kid living with the Chozo, exploring the planet before it became ruins.
I feel like they would do that as a flashback scene. Like,
did any
of you guys play Uncharted 3?
I haven't yet.
No, I suck.
The opening, well, there's like a prologue scene of Uncharted 3 you play, and then like the next chapter goes back in time to when Drake was like 13 years old, and you play as Drake like breaking into this museum in some South American country to steal an artifact from the museum.
Mm-hmm.
But it's like you're seeing the beginnings of Drake, but you're not just seeing them, you're directly playing them.
Yeah, that would be cool. That would be a great way to do it.
Yeah, they kind of do that in Heavy Rain too. Like, I don't know if you guys played that.
I hated it.
Hey, I liked it. I like Shenmue also. So, boom.
I had to move the controller.
Yeah, but Heavy Rain didn't have any forklifts.
Shave the dude's face.
Yeah, well, Heavy Rain didn't have enough drawers to open up that were empty and had absolutely nothing in them.
So, yeah, that's
so that's my prediction.
I really hope a good
2D Metroid. I don't know who would develop it, but
not Sakamoto, please.
So good. Please make it. Please, please, please make it. You can never make another Metroid game. Like, where's Metroid Dread? It's somewhere. Give it to me.
Yeah, come on.
Okay, my hopeful prediction. Well, boy, I was going to go with the Metroid thing too, but now I won't. My hopeful.
Haha, I stole it.
I know. My hopeful prediction is that they make a real Star Fox game, and somebody like Q Games makes it, and it's on the 3DS, and it's, you know, when they made Star Fox 64 3D, those were all original art assets and everything, but it wasn't really pushing the system.
Mm-hmm.
I would like to see them push the system with a new Star Fox game in 3D, no on-foot segments. Keep them in the R-Wings.
No, put them in a train. One train level, please. That's the best level.
I hate that level.
Or that, it's not a train, it's a landmaster level.
Yeah, I hate that.
What?
What I hate even worse is a submarine. I just want to just shoot myself.
I hate the submarine. The submarine sucks, but that landmaster level, it's the one on Macbeth. Don't talk to Johnny Betts. Don't tell him you don't like that level, because it's his favorite level in any video game ever.
I mean, can never hit all the switches.
I could. I got it down to a muscle memory. I could hit all of those switches every time practically with my eyes closed. I'm so good at it. Because I played the shit out of it. It's one of my favorite levels ever.
Yeah, when I played it like as a kid, I was pretty good at doing it. Then, I don't know, now playing like the remake, and even I played it on the Virtual Console a few years ago too. Just, man, I don't know. I just can't stand the tank. I just don't like it. So.
I don't. There's another tank level, isn't there? I don't like that
one. Yeah, there is.
Yeah, there's
the Macbeth level.
Rescue Slippy, and that was my other hopeful prediction for the game. Slippy fucking dies. Killed in an explosion in the beginning of the game.
That'd be nice.
Yes.
Well, we'll see how that goes.
More likely that they get Q Games to develop the Star Fox game than they would to kill Slippy.
Yeah.
They need that 11-year-old Japanese girl to do some voice work. She needs her college money.
Exactly. Exactly.
So, all right. Now our joke predictions. This should be fun. Patrick, joke it up.
All right. This probably isn't too much of a joke, but I was thinking, you guys remember when the Xbox 360 had that major hardware revision, and they at the E3 event, they were just like, it's releasing right now, and you all got one.
That's thinking, right, yes.
What if Nintendo did that with the Wii U, where everyone in the audience, they just hand out Wii Us?
That would be great. It will never happen.
I am going to E3 then.
it'd be the Saturn all over again. Like, oh, by the way, remember we said we were going to release it in like 4 months? No, it's out like in a week and a half. And then all the retailers got pissed because they didn't have time to plan for the distribution and the selling of it. They couldn't promote it, and they were all super pissed. So that's why it will never happen. But God, I wish. Even though I'm not going to E3, God, I wish.
And it'll come with ExciteBots too. That's a good one. I like that. I remain hopeful, actually. Mm-hmm. Go ahead, Danny.
Okay, for Wii U storage medium, I hope that they develop a new medium. And it's what it's going to be. It's going to be a combination of laser discs and HD DVD. it's going to be HDLD. That's going to be awesome. It's going to be a new standard across, you know, all media. Especially even in car audio and stuff too. You could have like 36 disc changes for laser discs that you have to put in your trunk. You have to, because, you know, where else are you going to put it? No, I really have a thing for outdated technology. And
they'll be able to put the entire Lord of the Rings Special Edition trilogy on one HDLD.
No, this has to be two or three. But
you have
okay.
to flip it halfway through, though. So
yeah. Well, you could flip the sides. Yeah,
you
have to flip it halfway through. Yeah,
yeah. So they'll release a hardware rendition later on where it just does the flipping automatically. Not, you know, because they have some of them where the laser goes to the bottom and the top and stuff. But
of course,
anywho, that'd be great. I think it'd be awesome. Maybe I'm the only one. So that's
that would be
fine.
Amazing. Weighs 300 pounds. And you have to buy a whole new console set up in your living room.
Awesome.
I like that. All right, Mike, go ahead.
Well, mine's not as funny because when I thought these up earlier today, I thought we were doing predictions, like things we thought definitely weren't going to happen.
Oh, that's
not,
fine.
Not just, but I think mine is funny tangentially just because it's kind of sad. I don't predict that when the Wii U launches, it will have a competent, robust online system.
Yeah.
That is not going to happen. It is going to be. I mean, the 3DS is the best we've gotten. Just the fact that we're down to one friend code, like, good work, guys. Good work. But mm-hmm. You're not quite there yet.
Yeah.
I don't understand why I have to put a friend code in still. Like, why can't I just put a gamer tag in? I don't. What makes it so secure that I have to give them a number before they can know my name? It doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
It has to be a combination of numbers, not letters.
Yeah. Or even, you know, man, it's like. Yeah.
The only nice thing about a friend code is it lets people, multiple people, have the same screen name. But mm-hmm. then that's a whole other problem. I almost
yeah. Exactly. And
it's
I mean,
less unique.
I think having the friend code is not necessarily bad, but I mean it sucks because you both have to put it in. You can't just hey right. one guy does it and then you're like, oh, you know, Joe Blow or Joe Jackoff.
Yeah, it
whatever
should be that
is
way. If you put
that.
The number
yeah.
in, it should send. If you put the number in, it should send a request. Yeah.
Exactly.
There's no reason that I need to get on Twitter. To do this, like, but I do. Yeah. I need to use Twitter or email or anything if I want to be someone's friend. Build it all into one system.
It was actually pretty funny, Mike.
Let me, you know, let me play a game.
We didn't really have a staff meeting so much as a friend code swap-a-thon.
Yeah, let me go into a game and you know, let me find him from my previous player's list and be like, boom, I want to add you as a friend. There will not be any system to support this.
So, you know, when Swapnote came out, I thought that was great, but. I thought my envisioning of the whole 3DS messaging program was I was assuming that it was just going to be built into the 3DS friend, you know, friend code area.
Yeah,
too.
And so it's kind of like lame that if you want to, you know, message your friends, you got to go to this other application to do it. You cannot just do this all on like the same thing.
Which it is, takes 15 minutes to prep the, the thing.
Yeah, that should run in the background. Isn't that what the point of SpotPass is? To download things in the background, not just send me a notification that I need to download something.
Yeah, which I found that kind of odd because here in Japan, you know, they have Nintendo Video and then this other video service here too. Basically, it translates as like SpotPass TV. And I mean, I always have my 3DS on, and you know, it just downloads the stuff like overnight. You know, whatever, whenever I'm sleeping or throughout the day.
As long as
it's
plugged in, it should be downloading shit.
Exactly, and it does that, and it does it just fine. So what the hell? Why is Swapnote not doing this? I have to boot up the thing, and it's like, oh, you have 57 new messages, but it only downloads,
like,
you know,
2.5 minutes later.
Yeah, it only downloads.
And at the very least, even if they can't build messaging into the Friends app, there should at least be a button that says send a message, and it throws you over to Swapnote and preps it, so you're already writing a message, and it's already set to go to that person.
Yeah. So I mean,
that would be way, way too convenient. Holy shit.
Well, I mean,
that'd be like how my iPhone works.
Hey, yeah. I mean, Nintendo is kind of getting with it a little bit. I mean, there are some things that they're doing. Basically, you know, you can go into Mario Kart right now. It's probably about the only game.
That's nice. Mario Kart's. But they're going to do that thing where a majority of the infrastructure is going to be built into the games and everyone's going to do a different implementation and most of them are going to suck. Like, they're going to come up with the most basic lobby system and then build a real infrastructure, then you can use it for 3DS and Wii U. You only need one infrastructure, just have them connect to the same servers.
Yeah.
It would be really cool to see, oh, look, you're on your Wii U, and your friend Zach is playing this on his 3DS. Why don't you send him an invite to play this game with you on Wii U, because I already know that you both own this game because you both registered it, and you've both played it before, and he'll get the message on his 3DS, hey, do you want to play Smash Brothers? Yeah, sure. Boom. Now we're playing together. No, that will never fucking happen. That won't happen in 2012, and that won't happen ever.
That won't happen in, like, 2022. I mean, come on.
Though, to be fair, it may actually happen with Smash Brothers if the way they're talking about interoperability, but I seriously doubt it will be that. It'll be, like, transferring. It won't be anything real.
Yeah.
Will it be a year until the OS is all the way done?
I won't be able to just hop online and play with somebody on my Wii U while they play on a 3DS. That's a fucking pipe dream. I mean, it's an entirely attainable pipe dream, but it will never really happen.
Oh my lord. Well, my joke prediction is not going to beat any of that. remind me the company that made the new Mortal Kombat. Whoever they are, they're going to make Primal Rage 2. And it's going to be amazing.
Could be cool.
Yes. Join us again, Mike.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can.
Oh, okay. Okay, cool.
It's going to be Primal Rage 2. It will retain the stop motion animation style, but better because it's HD.
Cool.
So it'll be three-dimensional like Coraline. So
yes.
You'll be I don't know if it's actually going to be on Wii U now that I think about it. My Primal Rage now might not fit Nintendo's sensibilities too well. They did censor the hell out of it on the Super Nintendo.
Too bad they got rid of Rare. We could have at least gotten a new Killer Instinct.
Yeah.
Oh, dude.
I don't like fighting games at all, but...
Killer Instinct.
So what they're going to do, Primal Rage versus Killer Instinct.
Yes.
Oh my god, that's actually probably a brilliant idea.
And Rare and Retro will develop it.
Fulgore versus a Tyrannosaurus Rex. Okay.
Well, they already have that raptor in Killer Instinct.
There you go. They're halfway there.
Secret playable character, Falcor from the Neverending Story. Boom.
You only get that if you pre-order at GameStop. If you pre-order at Target, you get Rainbow Bright's horse.
Sweet.
I would buy that game.
Yeah, I think I would too.
So there you go. There's all our predictions for 2012 and the many years ahead. Yeah, good show, guys. Thanks for joining me on this little shindig.
Yeah, indeed. No problem.
Yep. And may all of our wishes come true.
Yes.
Well, except mine, my last one. I don't want that to come true. I want that to be all not true. And
yeah.
Things will be wonderful.
I think we both know it's going to be true.
Yeah.
We'll just buy an Xbox 720 for the, you know, OS we want.
Or you could, brief, I guess, rat hole, but did you guys see that they're releasing Kinect for Windows?
No.
They announced it at CES yesterday. The Kinect for Windows costs $100 more than the Kinect for Xbox, and it doesn't even work with a fucking Xbox.
Oh my gosh.
The Xbox version... Also, the Windows one comes with a shorter USB cable because it's obviously not going to be as far away from a machine as it would be like at an Xbox. They're not going to let you plug it into an Xbox anyway, so I suppose it doesn't matter what length the cable is. You could still buy a $150 Xbox one and then like just plug it into your Windows machine. That works. There's drivers for it. So there's some specific lockout that they're doing with it that makes sure it won't work on an Xbox, but it will work on a PC.
Well,
the other one works both ways. The cheaper one works both ways, but I guess the Windows one comes with the SDK, and maybe I don't know if you need to pay or register and pay for an SDK without it, so maybe that's why it's more expensive.
Okay.
If that's true, then I'll cut them the slack for it. But there's still no reason for the Windows one to not work on an Xbox. That's so fucking dumb.
Yeah.
Why would you need Kinect for Windows?
People have been doing all sorts of interesting hacks with it, actually.
Well, who cares? Who's going to
use it? It's a really interesting human interface. I got one for Christmas, and I don't really use it for anything other than saying, Xbox, pause. Xbox, resume. Like, it's brilliant for when I'm doing chores and I want to pause Hulu. That's great.
But... Seriously, like, that's one of the only reasons I want. I remember when they were first showing it off, just, like, motioning through, like, the menus with your hands or something.
No, that sucks. Like,
Oh, it does. I experienced this at Christmas in Kansas. That does
It's
suck.
Really cool. It's mm-hmm. just that, and the hand recognition is fine. Like, that works mm-hmm. great. It's just that you have to track your hand so slowly, because if you move it too quick, you immediately overshoot whatever you're going for.
Right.
So you have to move real slow, even though the buttons are, like, the buttons on the new dashboard are gigantic on purpose.
Right. Yeah.
So they're really big targets for your hand. But then to select something, you have to hold your hand in place for like 3.5-4 seconds for it to like, and a little meter fills around the hand icon that says you are selecting this. If move your hand if you don't want to select this, basically. And if you don't move your hand before the meter fills, then it selects. So, but okay. It takes like 3 seconds. It's like it takes like 10 times as much time as it did with a controller to find the button you want to press.
Right.
And then it takes like a million times more, because it takes like a millisecond to press the A button, and it takes like 3.5 seconds to press the A button with your virtual hand. So,
yeah, and see, my problem too,
it slows shit down too much.
Yeah, I have a tiny, tiny apartment, so it's like I don't even think there'd be a point even having a Kinect, because it's so close
to my
TV.
The new,
you don't have a giant white painted room with white furniture?
I do have a white
room. The Windows one also, the Amazon description for the Windows one also says, it supports an up-close mode, so it can watch, like, individual fingertips, like, if your hands are right in front of it. Like, so you can use it, I guess, in theory, to project a virtual... You could have a little camera or light projecting a virtual keyboard on a table, and then the Kinect could just watch which keys your fingers were touching.
That's interesting. That annoys me about the Kinect is when you're playing, like, Kinect Sports or something, your hands look like flippers.
Or the fingers just don't animate or something. But they've said this is coming through a firmware update to the hardware, so the Xbox One should be able to do it. So that can't be a reason it's more expensive.
No.
So it's just far limited. But who knows? They might never update the firmware on the Xbox One, because you have to plug it into an Xbox to update it, and if you can't, or anyway.
Good point.
Yeah. So if they never put that into the Xbox SDK, then it won't matter.
Well, it'll be cool on the Wii U, because you'll have the dashboard on the touchscreen. You'll be able to just touch stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, it will have that, right? Just tell me they'll have that.
It should. Right. Well, I've extended this segment by like 10 minutes now.
I don't care.
Mission accomplished.
Yeah, that's good.
more editing work for me.
All right, gents. Well, there you go.
Great.
Those are predictions. May they all come true except Mike's. And... good day, y'all.
Yeah.
Peace out.
Bye. Later.
Hi, and welcome to the news with me, your host, Neil Ronahan. Also with me, we've got a full crew. We got Scott Thompson.
Hello, and real quick, I just want to say, Patrick, Danny, you guys can cover your ears. Zach and Neil, I just want to say fuck you guys for not putting a gun to my head and making me get Super Mario 3D Land sooner, because it's awesome. Patrick and Danny, you guys are exempt. You weren't here. You guys are assholes. All right, the end.
I didn't have it yet. Anyway, I'm exempt as well. It's so good, right?
I have no excuse. I apologize. I didn't realize it was that dire of a situation. I should have examined it better.
Thank you, Neil. As long as you realize you were wrong, I appreciate it.
I recognize the error of my ways. In the future, if Kid Icarus is that good, I'll just tell you to get it.
Thank you.
And that would have been an excellent segue if it weren't for the fact that I need to introduce everyone else. So we got Danny Bivens, straight out of Japan.
Hello, please.
And we got Patrick Barnett, who is mildly close to me compared to everyone else, indeed, which is weird.
So, hello.
Yes. And then Zach.
I'm imagining you guys are in the
party
same room.
Rock.
Yeah. But I had to introduce my epic segue to Kid Icarus, but I will now use that now, and it's not really that clever anymore. But Kid Icarus Uprising, we found out today, will indeed use the Circle Pad Pro. Sakurai,
first party game using the Circle Pad Pro.
Sakurai took some time out from posting freaking adorable pictures of his cat, which if you guys haven't already, go to Sakurai's Twitter. I'm following him. I think it's like Sora_Sakurai or something like that. Just search Sakurai Twitter, you'll find it.
I get enough pictures of cats on Swapnote right now. I don't need more.
But if you look at pictures of Sakurai's cat, it's amazing. Like his cat's crazy. It's awesome. And it's also like you get to see his cat like in front of his giant ass TV, his cat wearing a Santa hat, his cat with like some sort of fruit on his head, his cat sneaking up behind a door. Like, it's amazing. But anyway, Kid Icarus Uprising uses the Circle Pad Pro apparently, and it's basically for left handers, like me. Mm-hmm. So
me.
I'm excited.
And me.
Oh wow. Jeez.
We are owning this show now.
Right-handed?
Yeah, same here.
Yeah. Okay, well, we win or something.
Yes. Lefties rule.
But
I just wondered, with being left-handed, do you use your left hand to control the mouse on your computer?
No.
I use my right.
Okay, interesting.
I also play sports right-handed.
Well, yeah.
The only
come
thing
on.
I do with my left hand is draw, and okay, there's one other thing.
I assume you're referring to eating soup.
Yep.
Yes.
Soup with your left hand.
Eating clam chowder. I'm pretty much a pure lefty when it comes down to it. I mean, there are some things like, you know, mouse I use my right hand for, and like when I attempted to play guitar when I was younger, I really flipped it lefty. But that's more of just like things that I was taught by a right-handed person to do.
Yeah.
They were.
You didn't even do the cool
wrong
thing of just. You didn't even like flip your guitar over and play it that way? Play it like
no,
upside down?
Because it was more difficult, because that's how I was taught. Like I would have to mirror it in my head.
Yeah.
But anyway, the way it's going to work is that it'll basically just control exactly the same, except for you'll be able to use the circle pad on the right and use your hand on the stylus, which is a little unfortunate because I think there was some hope that it would be a dual stick game. But I think Sakurai gave some sort of example saying that, like, you know, the game relies heavily on using the touchscreen, and he feels it's best that way. But I'm very, very excited for that. I also read the feature story on Kid Icarus in Nintendo Power this month, and that made me very, very hyped for this game. I can't wait.
I still don't care. Maybe I should, but I really don't.
I mean, after playing, I played it last year at Nintendo World here in Japan, and I don't know. It's just kind of meh. It wasn't, like, bad, but it just wasn't, like, blowing my socks off or anything, you know.
So. See, my thing every time I played it, the thing that kind of held it back for me was that the controls, like, it was very hard to maneuver.
Mm-hmm.
But when I did, like, kind of like, you know, I actually did for a little bit kind of almost play the game backwards because I wanted to use my left hand, and that didn't really work too well. But like, if I was like, if I could just play it like I want to, then it would be fine. And this makes me happy that I'll actually be able to do that. And I know I was talking to someone on Twitter about this, where they said that like they feel like it's bullshit because there's basically a $20 lefty tax. But for me, I was probably going to get the Circle Pad Pro for Resident Evil Revelations anyway.
Yeah, yeah.
So me, it's not an additional cost.
Although I think I've said it on the show before, the controls in mercenaries aren't bad.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, but, I mean, there's nothing functionally bad for it, but it's like when playing mercenaries and playing Revelations demos throughout E3 and even the one that came with mercenaries, I definitely see where it's like, if I had a second analog stick, this would be better. Mm-hmm. Not necessarily like you know, like yeah. a world of difference. It's still functional without it, but it just improved with it.
Yeah, you know, I've played a little bit of the demo, the Resident Evil Revelations demo on from the eShop here in Japan, and it supports a CirclePad Pro, and it's kind of weird because it switches it to like a dual analog setup, and it's I don't know. I need to play with it a little bit more. It just feels kind of odd and feels kind of a little loose, like the way that you're controlling it. It's just it's kind of bizarre. I need to definitely play it a little bit more to see what's up with it.
Yeah, but that is Kid Icarus Uprising.
And, there you go.
CirclePad Pro coming out soon in North America. Danny's already like, I've had it for like a month.
Yeah, losers.
Old news.
Yeah. Move on.
Danny's already reserved his CirclePad Super Pro X.
Exactly.
It comes with a third.
Yeah, there's a third stick on the bottom. So
there it is. Actually, I have
ESI.
Exactly. Actually, I have two CirclePad Pros, so I can rock three joysticks if I really wanted to.
There you go.
So the next piece of news that we have is that Crush 3D, which was originally slated for September 2011, and then was delayed until February, and then was bumped up to January, and it was supposed to come out the day of this recording, January 10th. And today was the day that, after a week of suspicion, because I noticed that retailers had pushed it back to March, I finally got a confirmation for Sega on the day that the game was supposed to come out, that it is indeed not coming out today, and it's instead coming out in March. And judging by what retailers have listed, it looks like March 6th is the likely date for Crush 3D.
Well, now, I saw you ask Dan about this on Twitter, but did it get pushed back in Europe then, too?
We don't know yet, because okay. I've been going back and forth with Don Koopman about that, of him trying to contact people like Sega folks in Europe. And it seems like it's actually coming out on Friday in Europe.
Okay.
Which just seems really weird. And also, Zoe Mode, the developer, this is also a port of a PSP game from 2007. So it's not even like this is like some brand new game. But I think the developer's been done with it since the summer, which makes it even weirder. And you mm-hmm. would think that like this wide open time where like the next notable 3DS game you have coming out is February 7th or, you know, the week earlier in Europe, you got Resident Evil Revelations. And then right after that, it's an onslaught. You have Tales of the Abyss, Tekken, new Pro Evo game. You got Metal Gear Solid 3D. I think there's a couple other games too, and then all
Resident
culminating
Evil?
With. I did say Resident Evil.
Oh, you did.
Right.
Okay.
That's what I said first.
Sorry.
Because that starts off the mayhem.
Right.
And then it all culminates with Kid Icarus Uprising. In addition to all the eShop stuff coming out too. So it's just kind of like you had this nice window and you're pushing it back. I don't get it. It doesn't
make sense.
It's
just a good thing. That DSiWare pinball game is finally transferable because now I have my pinball game on my 3DS.
Yeah, and you don't have to buy Zen Pinball, which is actually coming out this week.
Oh, yeah.
That pinball game for DSiWare is pretty boss.
Yeah.
I don't think that company exists anymore.
No.
That sucks.
They fuse games. They made Metroid Prime Pinball, which is amazing.
Yup. But Crush 3D is not a pinball game, contrary to what Scott and Zach say. It does look really cool. Like, I was kind of looking forward to maybe picking this game up because it looks like it's this kind of, like, you know, perspective-changing platformer with the worst box art ever. But that's neither here nor there. Are any of you guys interested in this game at all?
I really don't know much about it. But
Not after I found out it's not a pinball game.
Yeah.
I'm only the only thing yeah.
I'm only interested because now I want to know what it actually is. And like you said, that box art is hideous, and maybe that was the delay. Maybe yeah, they finally saw it and go, geez, what are we doing?
Well, I mean, what you guys should all look up is the Japanese box art, which just makes no fucking sense. It's just like a bunch of warnings of just like, you can crush yourself. And like, it does, like, how this one had, like, the North American one is like this kind of like cartoony art style. And the Japanese one just looks like warnings you would like see on an airplane. It's so weird.
Oh, speaking of bad box art, this is completely off topic, but I have to tell you guys because you'll all appreciate it.
Probably not.
When I was in, that's probably true. When I was in Minnesota going down to Kansas for vacation, they have like a mall in the Minneapolis St. Paul Airport. And one of the stores is Minnesota Sports. And it's filled with, you know, Viking stuff. But guess what's on the front window of that store?
Madden 2000 whatever with Dante Culpepper?
A big cardboard cutout of Aaron Rodgers.
That's the biggest troll ever.
It really is.
Although, yeah. Although, actually, with Minnesota and Wisconsin, as far as I know, there's a lot of overlap with fans for both teams because they're right near each other.
Still.
Well, yeah, it's the same here. I live in Indiana, and a few years ago, the Bears and the Colts were in the Super Bowl against each other.
Oh yeah,
and it was the same thing because I live in Northwest Indiana, which we basically consider ourselves Chicago. Like we root for all the Chicago teams. That's why we don't need a baseball team because we have two Chicago baseball teams. But yeah, that was really heated, and it was the same kind of thing. You'd go to a store, and you just saw a plethora of like all the gear for both teams, and it was just kind of amazing.
Yeah, same in Central Illinois too, especially during that Super Bowl. I remember they were like even had special colored cookies and stuff like that, like orange and blue cookies, or you can get like a blue and like normal cookie colored cookies. So yeah,
nice.
Go Pack, go. Anyway,
yeah.
The next story has something to do with sports, and that's that there will be no Tiger Woods game on Wii this year.
That sucks.
Wah, wah, wah.
Which is just kind of like WTF. Although,
because
they've
put him out on with Motion Plus on all the other years.
Yeah. Well, I guess the last year was the third year with Motion Plus. I think 2010. Right. And even then, I think every year there was a Wii version of the game. It's just right. They added Motion Plus. It was the first Motion Plus game to come out.
And weren't they all well received?
Yeah, I believe Danny, yeah. you reviewed it last year, and yeah. I reviewed it. I think Zach and I did a team review of it the year before, and then I reviewed it the year before that.
Yeah.
And they're great games.
Mm-hmm.
I was going site founder Billy Berghammer pointed out, which I wasn't sure at the time, but apparently the Wii version of the game sold like ass last year. Mm-hmm. And I guess the theory with that is kind of that people bought the first Motion Plus game and then never really bothered to buy another version of it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I mean, for the most part, that might be true because there was that fervor over the new peripheral, and it was one of the first games to use it. So, of course, you're going to have more people buying it then. And that first version, I know for a fact, sold very well. Mm-hmm. And probably what happened is the sales tapered off, and now you're getting to the point where, guess what? The Wii's dying. Sure. It's just unfortunate because EA Sports was kind of like that last company that was still kind of supporting it regularly. You know, you had Tiger Woods, you had Madden, you had FIFA last year, and, for the most part, while... I mean, some people might disagree with me, but all three of those games are pretty good on Wii.
Yeah.
What when does Tiger Woods come out on the other platforms?
March 30th.
Okay, it's kind of late, but I just wonder if we'll just see a port of it to Wii U when Wii U launches.
That's probably what's going to happen.
Using the HD engine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
See, my thing is that I feel like, I mean, at this point, what was the new one going to be if not just like an update of 2012?
Mm-hmm.
Because I assume that's even what the unless they're doing a huge major update on 360 and PS3, which I doubt's going to happen because that's how EA Sports rolls. They basically, they release a prettied up version of the next gen version, and at some point, or of the past generation version, and then at some point they do a big overhaul and ride that until the next generation of systems. But I mean, I don't know. I feel like it's because it's coming out in March. Like you probably could have released it then and then released a new one on Wii U, because let's get real here. I don't think Wii U is going to come out until at the early September. So
probably,
but maybe EA is not sure of that. Maybe EA thinks it's coming out over the summer. Who knows? I know. I guess a little bit of Wii U news on top of that is that CES is going on right now, I believe. And Wii U was there. It's all the E3 stuff just showed again in private behind closed doors. But Reggie talked on Spike TV today, just kind of, reiterating what we already know, talking about when to expect Wii U after E3, but before the end of the year. Apparently, I guess, Jeff Keighley's on Spike TV. He asked Reggie about the possibility of a surprise launch. And Reggie's just like, oh, wouldn't rule out anything. if they Saturn this, like, they're screwed.
Or it's like, well, actually, it's launching right now.
Yeah. But, yeah. No Tiger Woods on Wii. It's a bummer.
Yeah.
I guess also kind of going along with this, that Grand Slam Tennis 2 game is only coming out to 360 and PS3. But I don't even know if I really call that much of a sequel, because that was actually supposed to come to all three platforms when it first came out, but it just came out on Wii, and they just put the 360 PS3 version on indefinite hold. Mm. So yeah, that game sucked anyway. We're not missing out. The last bit of news that we got is there was this kind of reveal on NeoGAF that people did some research on, like LinkedIn and stuff like that. That it seems like Retro Studios has been staffing up over the past 6 months or so.
Yeah.
And we actually did some research of our own and finding out that all these people that came over from companies such as Naughty Dog, Vigil Games, Redfly Studio, none of them are in the credits of Donkey Kong Country Returns or Mario Kart 7.
Mm.
So these dudes are working on a game. And, you know, the resourceful people on NeoGAF, I believe they found out that one of the guys who came over from Naughty Dog, maybe the guy who came over from Naughty Dog, I'm not sure exactly how many people came over, tweeted something about how, you know, this is going to make crunch time this year a lot better. Someone brought in, like, Mystery Science DVDs or something. So crunch time would imply that Retro Studios is going to be releasing a game this year.
Right.
Which, if you look at it from Donkey Kong Country Returns releasing 2 years ago, that makes sense. But I guess there was some thought that maybe, you know, they got kind of a little delayed from their normal schedule because they were working on Mario Kart 7. But, I mean, I guess other people might also think that Mario Kart 7 was just a small section of Retro Studios, which looks like it is the case.
Right.
Because if you'll remember, I believe
the whole studio doesn't need to be putting coins on those courses.
if you will recall, I want to say this was a year ago. I'm not sure the exact time. But Retro Studios was staffing up for what appeared to be a Wii U title.
Hammer.
And that's probably when all these people came on board, was around that time.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess, you know, Retro might have a launch game.
Ravenblade.
Yeah.
Yes.
I mean, fitting the Retro mold, you would assume it would have to be some sort of Nintendo franchise that they're kind of reviving. I don't think Nintendo would put them on an original title, as depressing as that sounds for both Retro and the world in general. But I think Nintendo is probably like, hey, you guys can make a Star Fox game or something.
Eternal Darkness 2.
How about this? Eternal Darkness 3. They skipped it.
Oh, shit.
It's a sanity effect, man. You think you already played the second game.
It's got like a cover, like one of those foil covers where you're tilting it, the 2 is like transforming into the 3 and back into the 2. Yes, thank you, Zach. Yeah, that's pretty awesome.
So, but before we go into listener mail, how about we just go around, kind of snap judgment. What game do you think Retro Studios is making, and do you think it'll make it to Wii U, make it during Wii U launch? Let's start with Scott.
God, you know, I just had something in my head, and then now I just forgot it. Come back to me.
Okay, Patrick.
My first thought was going to be F-Zero, just because we haven't seen that in a while, but I really doubt that would ever happen. Maybe another Donkey Kong game, but that's probably unlikely as well. I really don't know.
Zach?
I think they will not have a launch title, but they are gearing up for something big, and it's probably a, sadly enough, Metroid game.
And Danny.
Go ahead.
No, Scott, go for it.
Well, I was going to say, I remembered it before Zach said it, but that would have cued me in. Yeah, I think it'll be Metroid Other M 2, The Other M.
The Othering.
Yeah, I think that their title, I think it'll be maybe launch title, launch window-ish type of stuff, and I think it will probably have something to do with maybe a Nintendo franchise type of thing. As to what it would be, I'm not too sure. Maybe it's that mature Mario game that Miyamoto was talking about like 10 years ago.
They should make a Metroid game that takes place in the future long after Samus is dead, and they clone her, and they get a queen embryo out of her body.
Oh, God.
And then the queen develops like human characteristics and gives birth to a giant like half Samus, half Metroid, and then nobody will buy it.
Yeah, they'll call it Metroid Resurrection.
Right.
Anyway, I mean, I guess kind of going down the list, if it's going to be a previous franchise, I mean, the Metroid thing's definitely probably on the right track, I would imagine, especially after how Other M kind of crashed and burned. Nintendo's probably just like, yo, you guys just got to take this shit back over. It needs help. Metroid Prime 4, Metroid Other M 2, do whatever you want. But, I mean, looking down that, I mean, I see Star Fox as a possibility, although I feel like if you were going to make another Star Fox game, you'd give it to Q Games.
Right.
Because yeah, they kind of proved their worth in the past. They know the series very well. Somehow, I don't think it... Well, I don't think we can really rule out the possibility of it potentially being a Zelda game.
Super Metroid Returns.
That would be awesome. If they do Super Metroid Returns, I'd probably just quit the site because I will have passed out of happiness and die. But maybe they are working on a Zelda game. I mean, after Skyward Sword, I believe Anuma and other people said that you won't have to wait as long for the next Zelda game.
Yeah, but they're talking about like a handheld. They're going to be having like a 3DS.
That could be. I mean, I think RFN was talking about this a week or two ago, and we also have Miyamoto talking about how he thought that Retro Studios would be a good fit for a Zelda title. Just because there's a Wii version or there's a Wii Zelda game or a Wii U Zelda game coming out doesn't mean that there can't be a 3DS Zelda game also being made.
Sure, and they will give the 3DS one to somebody else. They tend not to make those with their internal teams. I think Fandar Glass and the Spirit Tracks, was that made by Nintendo?
Yes.
Shit. Well, a lot of the
people that worked on Phantom Hourglass and Spirit Tracks worked on Skyward Sword.
Well, okay, they must have learned
that was kind of like Zelda boot camp.
Learned a lot indeed.
But I mean, that's the thing is like, I don't see it out of the realm of possibility of seeing like Anuma kind of take that Skyward Sword team, or at least parts of it. Cause I imagine that some of that Skyward Sword team, I would hope, goes on to make other games because I think that that team was huge and I don't want to see a bunch of people laid off. But I could see Anuma taking a 3DS team and kind of working on that and working on an internally developed, Zelda game. And then maybe Retro Studios is currently working on, you know, that Zelda HD, like a furthered out version of that Zelda HD demo. For all we know, maybe Retro Studios made that video demo. Like, I don't think we ever actually were told who made that. I know Anuma oversaw it, but that doesn't tell you who developed that.
Can I say something kind of bitchy about Skyward Sword?
What?
That game would look incredible on an HD console.
I believe I saw someone tweet, like the week after it came out, saying that Skyward Sword is the only game that was released in 2011 that already needs an HD remake.
It would, though. I mean, it looks beautiful already. It's just got that the anti-aliasing problems.
Yeah,
right. But, and some loading time issues. But Mike and I were talking about that on Twitter like last week. I mean, just with what they were able to pull off with the Wii, like imagine what that team is going to be able to do when they have like real horsepower at their disposal. You know, as long as they don't phone it in, if they really try like they did with that, I mean, it's going to be incredible.
Yeah, but you know what? That team's working on a 3DS game because Retro is probably making that Zelda game.
Bum, bum, bum.
I don't even really know what other, I guess, obvious answers there are. And I guess Donkey Kong wasn't even really that obvious. Because I remember IGN had that rumor like a week before E3 and everyone thought it was batshit insane. maybe Retro is working on something totally out of left field, but I could see, you know, them working on a Wii U Zelda game that's going to come out in 2013 sometime. Like, that doesn't really seem too far-fetched, especially with Miyamoto's little tease.
It'd be pretty cool.
Well, or speaking of left field, maybe King Griffey Jr. Major League Baseball is going to get revived.
Oh my god, that would be the shit. Oh my god. You know, actually, left field never made that game. That was Angel Studios.
Angel AKA, Studios, okay.
Yeah, Angel Studios, a.k.a. Rockstar San Diego, which is crazy when you think about it. That the guys who made those Griffey games went on to make Red Dead Redemption. Seems almost preposterous.
I think there's a pretty clear lineage.
Well, that
there.
Explains the baseball minigame in Red Dead, right?
But yeah, I mean, honestly, the one thing that makes sense to me is I'm working on a Zelda game. I'd love to see him work on a Star Fox game, but I feel like, you know, that fabled treasure or Q game Zelda or Star Fox game would be way cooler. And I think that Retro, with their Western sensibilities and experience with, you know, that good solitary experience with the Metroid Prime games, could bring a lot to the Zelda franchise.
Sure. No, I agree, but we'll see if it's actually happening.
But yeah, that's all we got for news. I guess I'll pass it over to Scott for listener mail.
Alrighty. So yeah, we got three emails today. Two are actually from Pure Evil. He's hogging the email light here, so send in some email. So he's not the only one.
Connectivity at NintendoWorldReport.com.
There you go. He sent in a fairly long one about Zelda, so pretty cool that we were just talking about it. Nice little segue there. I'm going to trim
more
this down
a
little bit. Yeah, I guess so. So he had some complaints about the game. He commented on the last episode. He was a little disappointed that when we had the Skyward Sword discussion that everyone was pretty positive about it, because he was fairly negative about it. So
well, listen to every other podcast.
Yeah, it wasn't just that one. But he had some complaints about the controls, which, I don't know, it sounds like his controller's just broken more than anything. But let's talk about some of the design aspects, which I think maybe are fair to criticize. We'll see what you guys think. So here's got many of the quests you had to go on in the game were more annoying than they were fun. I also began to wonder if Nintendo took a list of everything people hate in video games and tried to jam them all into this one game. People really dislike escort missions. Okay, why don't we do an escort mission with the annoying robot? And I know, let's have enemies you can barely see shoot at it. Sounds great, but only if the robot whines the whole time.
See, I mean, I guess, are we going to do this all at once, just one by one?
No, go ahead. If you want to comment on that aspect.
I've gotten to that part yet.
My thing with that is that, is it a little annoying? Yeah. But I feel like there are steps done to make that staple escort mission. Because I don't think you can really shit on one game for having an escort mission when so many games have it. And they're usually a much bigger part of it. Hello, second half of RE4.
Like, hey, RE4 did it right, man.
No, I mean, RE4 did a good job, but there's still escort missions, and they're still kind of annoying. And that's why I would also say that in this game, it's not done terribly. Because in this case, sorry for spoilers, Zach, I'll try to skirt around it as best I can. but in this case, you know, this robot's following you, and the robot is defenseless, and you have to go through the lava area and basically climb up an area that you've already gone through before. But along the way, there's different enemies. And yes, you might not be able to see the enemies, but whenever you start up, and I believe there are checkpoints throughout this entire, you know, this mission that you go through.
Where there
you
are not
lead
checkpoints,
the robot. No. Oh, there are not?
No,
okay.
Because I lost pretty high up on the mountain.
It's been a while. It's been a while since I've done that, so I don't remember fully.
Already
but
hate it.
All of the enemies that you kill, when you start over, they're already dead.
Yeah, that's
true.
Do they give you an extra 10 seconds?
Yeah, but I mean, like that's the thing is that like once that happens, it becomes a little less frustrating because if you do have to restart it because some guy was out of left field, then when you get back up there, you'll know where the guy is. You can kill him, and then he's done for good. Mm. And that's why like that was a little frustrating. But I feel like once you kind of know that, then you know that like all right. So the robot's probably going to die, but not without me killing this guy first. And that way I can just kind of march through everything prior and just get closer to the end.
Yeah.
Still frustrating, but I don't think it's really that frustrating in the end.
I can't wait.
You can't wait to get to the annoying escort mission.
Yeah. I feel like what they were trying to do was just, I guess, try to kind of do something different. You know, I think they were responding to a lot of complaints that Zelda games were just all the same formula. So I thought, well, let's have a segment that's kind of unlike something we've done before. And I think it is. Now, whether or not it is executed to perfection, I guess, is up for debate. But I think I appreciate in that specific example that they tried to do something different. So
the funny thing with that is that in that same region, the fire region, whatever it is, Elden Volcano or whatever.
Yeah.
They also have a really cool stealth section, in my opinion.
Yes.
Oh, that it is that kind of thing. But it's once again it's done in a way
for this game.
It's done in a way that compared to stealth section in prior Zelda games, it is much improved.
Yeah.
That one has checkpoints, yep. I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, okay. It's pretty cool. And it's not like just a straight stealth stuff. I mean, it's basically just like a big puzzle. You know, you just have to think of it that way. And like you're plotting your course through this area as you're Well, as you're doing what you do, yeah, I don't want to spoil it, but it's very good.
But I mean, and you think about that you have this one, and then this is part of the reason why I really love the design of Skyward Sword, is that you have this one area, and there's an escort mission that you use the same part of it. There's, through that same area, you're doing a stealth section. Through that same area, you're just exploring it early on. Like, I really enjoy that, like, that dichotomy that they do throughout the game, and I know some people didn't. They hated repeating areas. But for me, it really worked because I really learned those areas, and I, you know, new sections kind of open up over time are a better way to do things.
Right. I mean, it sort of borrows a little bit from like Metroid philosophy with, you know, just sort of having you retread areas. But once you have new gear, it lets you get to new places you couldn't before. But
yeah,
I don't know. I grew kind of weary of going back to the same places three times, you know, each by the end of the game. But it wasn't that bad. It was just kind of like. Yeah, you'll see, Zach.
I don't mean to kind of jump on you here, Scott, but it's like in the desert area, you're not going to the same place three times. You are going to three separate areas each time.
The desert, yes. And the desert, I loved the desert. To me, the desert is the exception. Yeah. The desert was really well executed, specifically the second dungeon in the desert, which I won't spoil for Zach because it's so friggin' awesome. But the desert was great. But like the volcano specifically, I mean, you just mentioned it. You retread the same area three times. You know,
but you're doing such drastically different things. It's true.
I mean, I don't know. You know, they worked with what they had. I mean, I guess what's the difference between this and then just making a new area that you're doing this stuff?
Yeah.
You know, it's. I don't know. I guess it's just kind of nitpicking. But let's return to the email. So then he complains a little bit about the flying. He says that the speed tunnels are kind of too far apart, and you know, it's hard to get in them in the first place. And then, you know, if you miss it, I guess you're just spending a lot of time, you know, flying, and the flying is kind of boring because there's not much to do. What do you guys think about that? I
can't even defend that. Yeah, the flying, there's not really too much to do.
Right. It's kind of annoying. I mean, I don't know that it's much different than riding, you know, your horse through a barren field in Ocarina, or, you know, just traveling the empty...
Or Twilight Princess.
Yeah,
or the empty season Wind Waker.
The empty season, yeah, it's kind of a problem they have. They need to figure out a better way to kind of connect...
at least you had things you could do on the ocean.
Well, yeah, and even in Twilight Princess... Even in Twilight Princess, you could find, like, a crack in a wall to blow up and then go find a heart piece or something. You know, at least there was kind of exploration. But with the sky, there's no even reason to land on the small little islands to find heart pieces, because the only way to get them is to send up the goddess cubes, and then it tells you on your map when there's a chest there you can get. So there's only
four islands that
there's
actually...
there's no exploration in the sky. So I think that's a very valid complaint. And... it didn't detract from the game, because I enjoyed the aspects when I wasn't flying, but I surely could have lived without flying. You know, if I could just warp to everywhere I was going, I would have been very happy. All right, let's see. Then he mentions the loading times, which I kind of hinted to a little earlier. You know, he says it takes him out of the game every time the screen fades to black for 2 seconds while he lands on the... what the heck? What is the Skyloft? Thank you. And how when you do that, it even like resets where you're landing, which I did find this very kind of annoying. Where, you know,
I would be going to a specific area and just be like, "Too bad, you're in front of the building."
Yeah, it just puts you where it wants during that loading time. And I do agree with this, and it does kill the momentum a little bit, especially when you're on Skyloft and you're ready to go off an adventure, and you know, you run and you jump off the ledge and you call your bird, and then he picks you up, and then black and loading, you know. It just would have been so great if it was so seamless. And they were able to do it with the other tiny islands throughout the sky, because obviously there's nothing on them. But Skyloft, it just has to load. And I mean, you know, they had to do what they had to do. I don't blame them. I mean, there's limitations with the Wii, but sure. I do get his point. What? Are you kidding me?
Yeah, you know, I've only played probably like 45 minutes of Skyward Sword. I just haven't had a lot of time to play it. But I was watching one of my friends. She came over and she was playing one day for like 5 or 6 hours or something. And, you know, I saw the same thing where it's like, hey, she was like, hey, let's go up to this specific part in Skyloft and, you know, get off the bird. All of a sudden it's reset you at a completely, well, not a completely different place, but, you know, just not exactly where you would assume you would be.
Yeah.
It's kind of, I don't know, kind of weird. But, you know, like I said, I mean, there's just limitations with the hardware, and there's just really, you know, not too much that they could do, I guess. You know?
Exactly, yeah. Yeah, no, I agree. All right, I think I'm kind of done with this email here. There's just a little more complaints, you know, a little bit about the characters in the game, which we kind of talked about. There's not very many on Skyloft. Yeah. What else? Yeah, I
hating on Fi, which people.
Fi sucks.
Yeah, she does suck. I that was one of my most like popular tweets. I tweeted out like a few weeks ago when I got the second, well, sort of spoiler. It doesn't really matter. You obviously your sword gets upgraded as you're playing. you're I am leaving this the second upgrade. It lets you douse for more targets. And so I tweeted I tweeted a quote from Fi saying like, now with your second upgrade you can douse for more objects and talk to me, Fi, more often. And then I just put a quote for me, just say no, and just fill up the tweet with O's until I ran out of characters. And that got retweeted a lot. So I think that's a shared sentiment between everyone, that Fi, yeah, or Fi, however you want to say it, she sucks.
It's kind of funny because if she just talked less, she would be more annoying, or she would be less annoying. Because I think there is some like a decent character there, but it's just like, you have a 66% chance of surviving.
Like,
or
hell.
I am 70% sure that we have to go this way. It's like, well, no shit, the person told us to go that way.
Yeah, I thought... Go ahead, Danny.
I'll say, what does she think she is, C-3PO? I mean...
Seriously.
And when I got that
I am
first...
Fi, human-cyborg relations.
when I got through that first dungeon and found the rock, or whatever it is, the tablet, she started doing that creepy-ass dance.
Yeah, oh, dude, it gets better.
I was like, what are you doing right now?
She's just a freak nasty.
Yeah, she starts dancing and singing, just do wait. I didn't mind the dancing because it was kind of cinematic. I like that and stuff. But yeah, I just hate when she would just pop up randomly and tell you stuff you didn't need to know. And even the percentiles I found kind of funny in the beginning. But yeah, it just gets to be too much. And she's just so intrusive. I mean, she really does tell you stuff you don't need to know or stuff someone else just told you or... anything else. But
oh, by the way, you need to refill your hearts. Your health is getting dangerously low.
I know.
Yeah.
The thing is beeping at me.
Your batteries are low. Your batteries are low.
That was the worst.
Yeah, wait till you get that one, Zach. But yeah, so I don't know. I feel like pure evil here. I think if he had had a better handle on the controls, I really don't know why he struggled so much with it. I'd almost like to see him play the game and know what's going on, but I feel like he wouldn't mind these sort of small annoyances. But I think with already struggling with the sword play and the combat and everything else, and then on top of that, all these sort of little gripes, I think that's what's kind of added up for him. Because I agree with a lot of stuff he pointed out, and I do wonder if I reviewed the game if I would have ended up giving it a 10 like you did, Neil. It's so hard because I loved it, but there were just a lot of little things, but I don't know. But
Definitely, I went back and forth on giving it a 10 or not. And he also does make a comment later at the end of it talking about how, you know, I've noticed a trend where reviewers give high scores to certain franchises no matter what, and I wonder why it is. Grand Theft Auto San Andreas got a lot of 10s that it did not deserve. It was a good game, but nowhere near perfect. This is the same way. Spirit Tracks is the only thing keeping this from the bottom of my list. And the thing where I disagree with that is that a 10 does not mean a perfect game.
What?
And I think that's something that people get confused about,
right?
Is that a 10 out of 10, at least by our review standards, I mean, there are other similarities, but on the whole, or there are other dissimilarities amongst review things, but on the whole, a 10 out of 10 does not mean a perfect game. It means an excellent game, a fantastic game, a game you must play, et cetera, et cetera.
Right.
But it's, I mean, there is no perfect game.
Right.
There are games that get close to perfection, but there is no perfect game.
And I do feel
Super
that I
Mario
do...
3D Land,
yeah,
is a to bring great it, game
to bring it back. all right, well, let's move on to the next email from our good friend Kentucky Tim. we lost Zach, but hopefully he'll reconnect here. Neil, you kind of already responded to this one when he emailed it.
Tall.
You just laughed maniacally. The email says, with Sony announcing that PSP and Vita games will be downloadable on the Vita console, sans the expensive memory sticks, do you think that Nintendo could eventually offer both DS and 3DS games on the eShop for cheaper than their retail versions? With Nintendo offering SD cards as a storage option rather than the proprietary memory sticks of Sony, could the DS games get a boost in sales if you could store them on an SD card?
Yeah, I mean, my initial reaction was just laughing maniacally, and I stand by that. because I don't think there's any chance in hell that we will be able to download DS and or 3DS games on the eShop as it stands right now. Perhaps in a much improved later revision of the 3DS, or even in the system's eventual successor, that's probably going to happen. But as it stands right now, I don't think we'll ever see current 3DS retail games being able to be downloaded.
No.
And I think the odds of seeing DS games like that as well is very slim, especially like in the next year or two.
Yeah, it would take some time. 3DS games, no. Like, never. I really don't think so. After we get the GBA games and some DS games start phasing out because everything goes to 3DS, I mean, maybe. Maybe you'll get sort of like classic DS games available. You know, new Super Mario Brothers or, you know, some first-party games like that. I wouldn't say the full DS library will be available for download, but in a couple of years, I could see it happening. Some DS games, yeah, for sure. Tetris would be nice, since that disappeared very quickly.
Yep.
You already have Tetris. You can get Tetris, I believe, three different ways on the 3DS right now.
Yeah, but Tetris DS is so good.
Tetris DS is the best one.
It is. So, yeah, that's wishful thinking for sure. I'll settle for some more Nintendo or NES and GBA games. I would love to be able to play the other console games on the 3DS, like Super Nintendo games and stuff.
Yeah.
That'd be so great. Some of those games would be so perfect for portable handhelds, you know, especially, I don't know, games like Chrono Trigger and any of the RPGs,
Demon's
really.
Crest.
Well, you can get the DS version of Chrono Trigger.
Well, that's true. That's true. But it's retranslated and stuff, and yeah. I don't know. But yeah, so, okay. So, no, Kentucky Tim. Answer your question, no. Then the last mail here from Pure Evil again. After my 5-year-old son received Skylanders for Christmas, I noticed how fun and insanely popular the game is. I was thinking, why did Nintendo not come up with this idea? Do you think a similar game using Nintendo characters would sell? I was thinking it would be a great fit for Smash Brothers or a Mario Kart game. Instead of unlocking carts or characters, you could buy them and build them up to your style, then bring them to a friend's house. Nintendo could even do special characters as giveaways or Club Nintendo exclusives. What are your thoughts?
I'm surprised they don't do this for Pokemon, honestly.
That's true.
There'd be so
especially many. Yeah, can you imagine that? Oh, jeez. I wonder with the success of Skylanders, though, if Nintendo doesn't kind of look at this and think about it, at least in passing, you know? You'd have to think someone internally is hip to what's going on with Skylanders and is at least tossing it around. I don't know that we'd ever see it, but I don't know.
I mean, you do see a lot of Pokemon toys already. It'd be marrying the two.
Yeah.
All you have to do is slap a microchip on the bottom of them.
Yeah, I can especially see it with, like, say a new Pokemon game that introduces another, like, new 150, but if you want to get the classics in there, like, you buy the toys and put them in there, you know? Yeah.
I mean, I think it would go against Nintendo's rule of, I mean, why they're reticent with DLC in the first place is that, like, you know, when you buy the game, you should have the game.
Right.
Which is, I mean,
I appreciate.
Yeah, which I a little bit agree to disagree with Skylanders, because on one hand, yeah, it is a little shitty, but on the other hand, it's so cool.
Well, especially being a kid, you know, like, yeah, sure, being parents and adults and having to buy these fucking toys, you know, tons of them, we hate it. But a kid who has no concept of money, like, collecting toys that you can play in your video game, like, that's got to be the greatest thing ever. I would have loved that as a kid. I mean,
dude,
playing
I love it, and I'm 23 years old.
So there you go. So, I don't know. But I agree with you, Neil. Like, it does seem against Nintendo's philosophy. So, I don't know. I don't know.
But hey, we're getting DLC with that new Fire Emblem game.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, it's not too unlike the e-reader. Yeah. You know, you didn't buy characters, but you were certainly buying packs of cards to put, like, new levels into, you know, Mario whatever advance, you know, Super Mario Brothers 3. And things like that. So,
did
like
anyone here ever have an e-reader?
No,
I always wanted one, but it's like, what, like $40 or something, and
yeah,
I could just never, get myself
it, right?
to. Yeah,
I think
like,
I saw
why?
One in a store one time, but I don't think I've ever actually seen like a real one.
I wish I would have bought one when they were like on clearance when the GBA was dying, and then bought a bunch of cards and stuff then, but. I'm certainly not going to go back and buy one now, and yeah, I didn't at the time when it was new because it was very expensive. But
yeah,
so I guess that's true. If you think about it that way, they have sort of looked into technology like that. So who knows? Maybe they'll go back to it. So, I don't know.
There was a while there where the Pokemon trading card game supported the e-reader.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's when I stopped
buying Pokemon cards. You drew the line.
Yep, that was my line.
There it was. And you would not cross it. So, yeah, that'll do it for Listener Mail. Zach, do you want to pimp your podcast?
Yes, I do. I just started a podcast that is a complete ripoff of the Fanboys Lunchcast, although it is a dinner cast, completely different meal, and it's just me and three friends. We just put up the first episode at crosstalk.com. Since Carl wouldn't have me on any of his shows, I just decided to have my own show.
That dick.
Right? But it's fun. It's the first episode's 2 hours because we stitched two episodes together because I was gone for Christmas. But it's about our top 10 movies of all time, and you may disagree with some choices. But
now, do you eat dinner while you're recording?
Yes.
Do you?
I was eating sushi.
What'd you eat?
For episode two, I ate sushi. For episode one, I think I ate chicken strips.
Hey, cool.
Yeah.
And you guys record this all in person, right?
Yeah, I have a digital recorder, like one you use in college. I just press record and put it in a cup so that the microphone's facing up, and we just...
Okay. Yeah, eventually you should get like a nice like little 4-track recorder or something, and everyone could have their own little mic. But
there's a very nice argument about whether or not in The Thin Red Line Sean Penn should have given all the morphine to that dying guy or not. I don't think so. I think that was a bad move.
These are philosophical debates. I think too, with each episode, you should include what you guys ate so someone could make what you guys ate and eat it like along with you while they listen to it.
Exactly. Have the same exact experience.
I already do that to Zach every day.
Yeah.
I find out what he's eating for dinner using the camera I put in his house.
There you go. Every time you're sitting down to eat dinner with your wife, Zach, like, Neil's eating the same thing.
Yeah.
How much do That's you see, good. Neil?
Oh, Zach, I've seen more than the figures you heap.
Yeah, he sees that other thing you do with your left hand. And now we've come full circle.
That's a callback. Send in listener mail and stuff like that to Connectivity and Nintendo.
Masturbate. The joke is I would masturbate.
On that note...
Hello and welcome to our Connectivity Hockey Night. I am Scott Thompson. I'm joined by JP Corvin.
Hello.
Hello, hello. This is something we've kind of been talking about for a little while, and we finally got the time to get together and talk a little hockey. Today we're going to be talking about the recent refusal of the new realignment plan by the NHLPA, the Players Association. And then after that, we're also going to be breaking down 24/7. Which just recently followed the Rangers and the Flyers leading up to the Winter Classic, and it was awesome.
It was great.
And it was really good. So, let's start with the realignment then. So this was pretty drastic, and I kind of didn't expect it. Like, when the owners all had their meetings, I kind of thought it was just going to be, Winnipeg would move west where they should be, and then like one team would move east, either like the Blue Jackets or the Red Wings or something.
Yeah.
And then that was going to be it.
But yeah, and then you get this whole thing, four conferences, you split it, you know. It was a crazy plan, you know. You took, right now there are two conferences of 15 teams. This would split it into four conferences, 2-7 and 2-18 conferences.
Mm-hmm.
And it was generally designed to reduce travel time because a lot of the teams in what is now the Western Conference have a lot of travel. Because you have the Western Conference is stretched out all the way from like Columbus to the West Coast.
Right, like Columbus all the way to Vancouver.
Yeah, or to, you know, Los Angeles. I mean, it's like they got a lot of ground to cover. And so they were trying to reduce the travel time and kind of even it out for everybody in the league. And I was hesitant at first. I didn't really get it, but the more I looked at it, I really liked the plan. I thought it was a cool idea.
Yeah, same here. And the fact that they were like ready to roll it like out for next year had me really excited.
Yeah, it's like, I think, 27 of the teams or something. Like, almost all the teams, the owners, agreed on this.
Were on board, yep. It was almost, universally voted in. It would have been interesting, too, because it would have made, like, conference play so much more important. Because you had to, basically, be the best in, one of the best in your conference to make it to the playoffs.
The top four in a conference made the playoffs, I think, under the system. And they hadn't finalized the playoff procedures yet. They didn't quite know what they were doing there.
Right.
But, yeah, it was the top four teams in the conference. You'd still have, it's like it is now. You'd have half of each conference making the playoffs.
Right. But what was great is your wins in conference were much more important because you played the conference much more. You know, with this new plan, you would play teams outside of your conference twice. You'd play once at their home and then once at your home, and that
that's a great part of it too, because a lot of the time, like now, teams in the other conference, you might only play them once, so you might not get, like, if you're looking at home games, you might not get to see every other team.
Right.
It balances it out that way, and then you get to play everybody, but you also have a lot more focus on the teams in your own conference.
Right, and it is. It was much better. I mean, speaking as, like, a Hawks fan, the Blackhawks only play most of the original six teams once every season. I mean, because most of them are on the East now, so they play Detroit, six times a season, but outside of that, they play Toronto once, and Boston once, and Montreal once, and, the Rangers once, and so on. So it just would have been cool to be able to see those teams twice. I was really looking forward to it.
And it's like, as a Flyers fan, most of our like traditional rivalries are already in the division,
right? So you'd be fine.
Pittsburgh and the Rangers and the Devils and all that. But we'd add. I mean, having the Capitals in the conference would be nice. NBC must love that.
Sure. Oh, I'm sure.
I saw that the joke at the time was that the conference that the Flyers and the Penguins and the Rangers and the Capitals was called the NBC Winter Classic presented by Bridgestone Tires.
Yeah, pretty much.
That's like, so.
Every Sunday after New Year's, like one of those two teams would be the Sunday afternoon game that they highlight,
They gotta go for it. You get the big market teams, the popular teams, but,
So the Players Association just announced, I guess it was like one night last week, just kind of announced that they had refused it.
Friday?
Just a few days ago that they had refused the plan. I guess it turned out that they had wanted the NHL to provide them with some, a temporary schedule that would show how travel would work.
It seems like kind of a bullshit excuse.
This is
pretty clear that this is the beginning of the war over the collective bargaining agreement that's going to expire at the end of this season. This is, the players union rejected this so that they'd have something to give in on in the negotiations in the off season.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. No, I totally agree with you. I mean, cause really like the whole plan, I mean, just looking at it, you can tell it's designed to make travel easier on players. So the fact that they couldn't provide you with like a detailed schedule to this point, that's what you're going to stand on. That's what you're going to cite as your reason for refusing it. I mean, keeping the current plan is kind of terrible for a lot of teams, especially like you said, JP, on the West.
Winnipeg especially.
Well, yeah, Winnipeg. I mean, yeah, so that's like a clusterfuck right now. So they're going to have to stay in the Southeast Division.
The great thing is, though, I like a lot of people are pulling for it. Either it gives Winnipeg one more year to be able to have forever a Southeast Division champion banner hanging in the rafters in Winnipeg.
Man, yeah, how awesome would that actually be? That would be so just stupid.
Yeah.
That's great. But yeah, I mean, so they're playing in the Southeast Division, which is like dominated by Florida teams.
Yes, Tampa Bay and Florida who play Miami and Washington and Carolina. Yeah,
exactly. So, meanwhile, they are located in Winnipeg, which is like in Western Canada. So it just doesn't...
You play 3 games at those teams. So you get 12 times traveling to the Southeast, all the way across the continent. Yep. So it sucks for them.
It really does. Yeah, that's kind of the biggest joke, I think, out of the whole thing, that the Players Association would cite travel differences, and then there's Winnipeg, like, well, I guess we're stuck traveling across two countries a bunch of times a year now. But yeah, but I do agree with you, JP. I think this is the first sign that this bargaining over the CBA is going to be very, very volatile, I think, and it's going to be interesting.
It worries me. I mean, really, the league... I mean, I at the time, for anyone who isn't aware, the league missed a whole season because of a labor dispute, a lockout. You know, what was it, 2005? So they missed a whole season, and everybody thought that was going to be a disaster for the league. But shockingly enough, they've really bounced back since then. I mean, they instituted a whole lot of major changes in the way the game is, and I think most of them, probably with the exception of shootouts, have improved the game.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, they've sped it up, they've more, you know, like a faster game, a higher scoring game. It's really been good for the sport.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. I mean, the removal of the two-line pass and the... You know, even the trapezoids in the corner, which can be dangerous on icing plays, you know, but they do prevent goalies from just going back there and chipping the puck all the way back down.
Yeah, I mean, it's sped up the game, and it's like, and the league has, I mean, it's more popular. I mean, they've said that last year's Stanley Cup Finals were the most watched in the history of the sport in America. So it's like, and that's with the Canadian team in the finals.
Right,
so
exactly.
It shows that the sport is growing in popularity, and that would be shot to hell if they have another lockout, that they miss a lot of time again.
Yeah.
I mean, that would be disastrous for the league. I really hope it doesn't come to that.
Yeah, I got to think that everyone realizes the growth that the league has made in such a short amount of time and will do everything they can to prevent that. Now, do I think this will write up right to about the time the season starts next year? Yeah, probably, because, you know, everyone wants their money. But, yeah, I would hate to see it cut into the season at all. Let alone, I mean, cancel a whole season again. That would be
We've seen this in the other sports as well recently. I mean, the NBA missed time because of a lockout. Mm-hmm. The NFL had a lockout. They didn't end up missing any time, but there was a very highly publicized lockout. They missed most of the offseason.
Yeah.
Whereas baseball actually, their CBA expired, and it kind of, they fixed it. You didn't really hear much of anything.
I was just going to say, baseball was the only one that was just like, no, we're cool, guys. Like, we just signed a new document. We're fine. No, we didn't fight at all. Yeah, we're
hopefully
good.
Hockey's more like that.
Yeah, you know? I would hope
Or at least, at least the NFL. Don't miss any time. Don't cause too much trouble, but get it done.
Yeah.
So, anyway, I guess we'll move on to the 24/7 and the Winter Classic.
Yes, yeah, very, very exciting. So first of all, JP, how excited were you when they announced that the Flyers were going to get the Winter Classic again?
Well, I thought it was cool. I mean, like you said, again, this is the second time the Flyers have done it.
In what, 3 years?
And this pisses me off. This was the fifth Winter Classic.
Yeah.
And so it was 2 years ago that the Flyers were in it. They played
Boston.
Boston. And then that was in Boston at Fenway Park. Mm-hmm. And this year it's at, it was in Philadelphia against the Rangers.
Yes.
So, yeah, people complain about that because the Flyers have been in it twice and the Penguins have been in it twice.
Right. So, and it's just this whole total, yeah, like Eastern Conference love fest. But I mean, I understand, you know, the teams on the far west anyway, you know, the Canadian or the California teams and stuff. It's not like they could exactly host it, and there's no real rivalry with any teams that are in cold areas that could host it. So they're kind of left out.
Well, it was a few years ago. It was Chicago and Detroit,
yes,
right?
Which was awesome.
Actually, I've been hearing lately the rumor for next year is that it's going to be Detroit and Toronto.
Yes, that's what I've been hearing as well. Which is kind of,
surprising. I wouldn't have expected them to put a Canadian team in the game.
Yeah, precisely. Yeah, because as we all know, NBC shows the game, but they don't get any of the marketing dollars that, you know, come from Canadian viewers.
NBC only gets the money from the American viewers. Exactly. And that's why you see teams like Philadelphia in there, because they bring in the ratings. Yep. So putting a Canadian team in there is an interesting decision.
Right, they lose like one whole market, basically. So it is kind of interesting, but it seems more geared towards the fans, which is nice to see.
It's good, yeah. that's what you want to see.
Right, although it is kind of interesting. I mean, I know it's an original six matchup, but this is the same thing where, you know, the Wings are in the West and the Leafs are in the East, so they only play each other once a year. So it's not really a rivalry, per se, which, has been, like, the crux of the last few Winter Classics. Probably all since, I guess, the very first one, which I don't know, maybe you
Buffalo,
know.
Buffalo-Pittsburgh. I mean,
is there much of a rivalry there?
No, not really. Yeah. I mean, like, I live in Erie, Pennsylvania, so I'm about halfway between Buffalo and Pittsburgh, and I'll say that there isn't really anything there.
Yeah, I didn't think so. So that one was kind of weird. But ever since that one, I mean, Detroit, Chicago, Philly, Boston, Penguins and Capitals, and then, and then the Flyers and
Flyers
the Rangers.
And Rangers
again,
I mean, so... Yeah, we'll see if that is actually what happens, and so I'm excited. It's always a great game. I mean, it's in a great atmosphere for a game.
Yeah, definitely. So that'll be very cool.
But the 24/7. I hope they. I really to segue there. I hope they do that again next year, because it was a really fascinating series, I thought.
Yeah, it really was. Now, I never watched I didn't watch the first season. I don't know if you did, JP. I guess I was kind of like. That was my form of, like, revolt, because I was so mad that the Penguins were getting it again and that it was this stupid...
I didn't even realize they did it last year.
They did, I'd like to go back now and watch it, since I've watched this one.
Yeah,
like
this was really cool.
But I was just so mad that the Penguins got it again, and it was that stupid Ovechkin-Crosby rivalry that just means nothing to me. And I don't even think is, like, that much of a rivalry for the teams. It doesn't, you know, I don't know, but...
Especially with Crosby not even playing.
Not now, yeah.
Cheap shot. Yeah. Come on. I hate the Penguins. Of course I do. Flyers fan here. So I'm going to take lots of cheap shots at the Penguins.
There you go. But I guess if you're listening to this and you don't know 24/7, which I'd be surprised if that was the case if you made it this 13 minutes into this so far. But so 24/7, it's an HBO show. Basically, for 4 weeks leading up to the Winter Classic, camera crews follow both the teams that are competing in it. So the Rangers and the Flyers this year. It's kind of like sort of unprecedented access to the behind the scenes.
You saw like everything. Yeah. I mean, you saw in the locker room before game, after game, between periods even.
Yeah. Coaches meetings before a game.
Yeah, coaches meetings. Yeah. You saw like even sometimes like in the players' hotel rooms and their homes.
Yep.
You know, so you saw everything.
Not to mention that the players were all mic'd up during the games.
Yeah.
You got to hear all the stuff that they're saying to each other.
It had to be on HBO.
Oh, for sure.
Because... there would be a whole lot of bleeping going on if it were on any other channel.
Yeah, for sure. Like, easily. It could not exist on basic cable. That's for sure. And so it was just really fascinating. JP, I'd imagine you especially liked it. I mean, I'm not a fan of the Flyers or the Rangers, so I kind of came into it from an outsider's perspective. But being a fan of one of those teams, it has to be wonderful, I would think.
It was a really cool... thing to be able to see behind the scenes with the Flyers, you know, to see like all the stuff going on, you know, to get to know, you know, to seemingly get to know some of the players better, their personalities and all that, you know, because I'm familiar with some of them with their, at least to the antics on Twitter and whatnot, but I mean, to really get into their lives like that, it's a fascinating look.
Right. And to get their voice, you know, and really get their personality like that.
Well, no more personality, I think, at least on the Flyers side, than Ilya Bryzgalov, the recent free agent signing goalie who
quickly became the star of the show.
Oh, yeah. He was entertaining. I mean, like I said at the time, I wish he were as entertaining on the ice as he is in that show. Because he is struggling recently.
He really is.
But
another bad game last night against Ottawa, right?
Last night he was bad. Yeah, they had a 4-2 lead against Ottawa. In the third, and they blew that. The previous afternoon, which was also against Ottawa, they had a home and home. He looked really good. Mm-hmm. I mean, he played great in that game. He gave up 2 goals and he made some huge saves.
Right.
But then yesterday, I mean, you have to question putting him in 2 days in a row.
Sure.
I mean, even if you're not struggling, that's kind of a, do you really want to do that from a coaching perspective?
Right.
But, I don't know.
Yeah,
it's like, you know, they touched on it in the show when they didn't start Brizgalo for the Winter Classic. They started Bobrovsky in the Winter Classic, and to me, like, that was the right decision to make from a hockey point of view.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Because Bobrovsky has been playing really well lately. I mean, Bobrovsky's, you know, generally in hockey, if you're giving up about 2 goals a game over the long haul as a goalie, you're doing pretty well.
Yeah, that's like the benchmark. That's what you want.
Yeah, and that's really what Bobrovsky's been doing. In his last 4 games, he's given up 8 goals. I mean, he's been playing really well lately.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, sometimes I feel like they're just trying. They're paying Brizgalo so much money. They gave Brizgalo a ridiculous, you know, hugely millions and millions of dollars over 10 years contract in the offseason. And so I think they're just hesitant to give up on him or to sit him too much. But really, Bobrovsky's the hot hand right now, and you've got to keep playing him.
Yeah, it definitely seems that way. But I think I'll splice the clip in here. But yeah, Brizgalo's, I mean, just whole speech about the universe, like right from the get-go.
Oh, man.
I don't know, right now is I'm very into the universe, you know, like how it was created, you know, like what is it, you know, the solar system is so humongous big, right? But if you see that, like, our solar system and our galaxy and, like, on the side, you know, like, it was so small, you couldn't even see it. Our galaxy is like huge. But if you see the big picture, our galaxy is like small, tiny, like, dot in the universe. Like, and you think, like, and we have some problems here on the Earth we worry about compared to, like, nothing. Just be happy. Don't worry, be happy, right?
It was just incredible. I mean, he was just, the things he was saying, I mean, it was just, I couldn't, it was fascinating. I mean, to say the least.
And what was it? Who is it? What was it illegal to shoot in Russia?
Tigers.
Tigers.
Someone brought him like a Russian bottle of booze and asked him like to like decipher what it was. So he
yes,
did. But
there,
then he goes on this whole spiel about the tiger because there's a picture of a tiger on it.
Tiger on the cover and on the bottle. And he said, if you showed the tiger in Russia, you get the death penalty.
Yeah, yeah.
And he goes on about this, and he's just. Now, he's like, I think, I mean, and he got less so in the later episodes.
I think partially
because he was a bit self-conscious about how
exactly.
He was portrayed on the show, and partially because he was really slumping big time around that
time.
Yeah,
so he wasn't prone.
He wasn't in the mood to
goof
around.
Yeah, exactly. But that second episode, because that was the first episode, the second episode, which they start filming immediately, like the next day after the first episode airs, which is so
yeah.
cool.
And his teammates, it's like at breakfast the next morning, the teammates are ragging him about.
Yeah, they're calling
about,
him Mr. Universe.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
they won't sit by him. They leave him alone at his table to eat lunch.
Yeah.
And then he goes on this whole rant again about how, like, his dog is, like, a beautiful blonde woman and all this
yeah,
stuff.
Yeah, really, and, he was... Really, at least the first 2 episodes of the series you have to watch just to see what Brizgalo says.
Yeah. He really does, mm-hmm. rein himself in, unfortunately, and I think you're right. I think due to his struggles and probably his sudden popularity.
I think the popularity, I mean, if it were all about the popularity, he wouldn't have been as entertaining as he was in the second episode.
Right.
So I think it's just he really has not been playing well lately.
But even his personality, seeing the 24/7 and then like seeing his interview he did after the practice before the Winter Classic when he announced before the team did that he wasn't going to be playing. You know, he had that same kind of like, he's just a quirky, weird dude. I mean,
yeah.
The fact that he opens up by saying he has good news and better news and
great news and good news. The great news is I'm not starting. The good news is we have a chance to win.
Yeah. I mean, as a Flyers fan, how do you feel hearing that? I mean, this guy you're paying.
I mean, that's
an unprecedented contract. And like,
I mean, you gotta be angry at it. I mean, cause you know, they gave him a lot.
Yeah.
I mean, they traded away some of the cornerstones of the team. Now, I'm not saying that it was a bad move. I mean, trading Mike Richards was apparently a locker room cancer, and we got a ridiculous amount for Jeff Carter.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you got Voracek, who's been playing well, and the first-round draft pick that turned into Sean Couturier,
yeah.
who has been playing right away and has been great. So
right.
really,
I do feel bad for Carter now, who is sitting on the albatross that is the Columbus Blue Jackets.
Oh, that's...
Who just fired their head coach today.
That's just sad, you know. As a Cleveland sports fan in hockey, or in baseball and football. I want to see Columbus do well, but they're in bad shape.
They just won't. I'm excited. The Hawks play them tomorrow, so it'll be the first game under their new head coach. So it'll be interesting to see how that goes.
First game under a new head coach is a dangerous thing.
Yep, it can be. So
in any sport, I think.
But Carter even refused to meet the media for like three or four days after he got traded. I think he knew, like, he was just that distraught that he got traded to this horrible team, and that was before the season even started. Imagine if he knew then how the team was going to be.
Yeah, look how good Boyan. You know, the Flyers were definitely the winner of that deal.
Oh, for sure.
I think even without Bruce Golov, I like the moves they made in the offseason. I mean, you know, it's just, I wish Bruce Golov would play the way he was supposed to play, the way, you know, to the level that they're paying the money that they're paying
right.
for him.
I don't know what the deal is. I don't know if it's just more pressure, because he always put up solid numbers in Phoenix. I mean, he was always
Which is kind of crazy. He put up solid numbers in Phoenix where you didn't have the kind of talent in front of him that he has in Philadelphia.
Right.
I mean, that's a crazy team. I mean, even with the injuries they had, even with Chris Pronger out for the year, they've got a fantastic lineup in front of them. Mm-hmm. So I don't get how he's struggling as much as he is. I think it's got to be psychological to some level.
I think you're probably right.
I think part of it is the fact that you've got Bobrovsky there, who played really well last year. He was a rookie last year. And I think if the Flyers have the long-term solution at goalie on the team, it's Bobrovsky. It's not Brizgalov. And I think that may be some of the pressure on Brizgalov, because he knows he's got someone that talented right behind him ready to replace him.
I will say I was kind of shocked that they signed Brizgalov, because I thought they were just going to go to Bobrovsky. That really surprised me, because he seemed solid.
Bobrovsky, I mean, he fell apart toward the end last year, but I mean, he's a rookie. I mean, he played really well for most of that season.
Right.
And like I said, If the long-term goalie for the Flyers is on the roster right now, it's absolutely Sergei Bobrovsky. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, but the Flyers have had issues at goaltender for over a decade. Since Ron Hextall in the 90s, I don't think there's been any kind of consistency at goaltender in Philadelphia.
Right. And Brizgalov even spoke to that before he went on his big universe spiel on 24/7. You know, he was making these jokes about how people couldn't believe he signed with Philly because it's such a horrible market for goalies, you know, and that, you know, he wouldn't survive and stuff like this. And he kind of spoke to that, and then it was sort of foreshadowing.
Kind of looked up to him.
But I guess getting back to 24/7, you mentioned Pronger, who's out with a concussion now. And that was one aspect of the show, at least early on in the first two episodes, that was kind of fascinating to see. And that was the concussion protocol. Because you've heard that the league has really stepped up to try to, you know, prevent concussions and prevent players from going back too soon after they've been concussed. It was kind of cool seeing the different things they have to go to, like the quiet room and how they get examined, and then like the tests that Giroux had to go through.
Yeah.
It was just interesting.
Yeah, I mean, it was kind of interesting that happened then. I mean, you had it while the cameras were there. You had Giroux, just really the young, one of the emerging stars in the league, get his concussion, and you get to see it from behind the scenes. Mm-hmm. It was a fascinating look at it.
Yeah, it really was. I mean, just perfect timing. I mean, you couldn't ask for, you know, I mean, it sucks that he got concussed, but in terms of like TV,
he's back and he's as good as he ever was.
Right,
I mean, it's not like, you know,
it didn't end his career or something. Yeah, which is good. But in terms of TV entertainment, I mean, you couldn't ask for. I'm sure like the HBO producers were just like just so excited that happened. You know, in terms of just entertainment value, just because it did give you an interesting view into something you don't see very much. Mm-hmm. On that same note, something that I found intriguing as a hockey fan too was, I think it was in the third episode, when there was a call that had to be reviewed, and they actually showed like the war room in Toronto.
Yeah, that was cool.
That was really awesome. You know,
because you always see it get referred to. Like if you watch a game on TV, they'll talk about all this is going to the, you know, to the war room in Toronto, and you get to see what they had on there.
Right, because all you see normally is you just see the ref sitting there talking through a headset, and then like a few minutes later,
they'll show the replay that they have from the TV cameras.
Yep. But then you just see that war room with these guys just at this like control panel, and then there's just, like, I mean, like 20 TVs out in front of them just playing every game that night. I mean, it was just so fascinating.
Yeah. And it was, I mean, you get to see behind the scenes a lot of things. I mean, like you say, I mean, it's more interesting for someone who's a Flyers fan or a Rangers fan, but even, like you said, for someone who's not, you get to see a lot of how things happen. You know, a lot of this is relevant to other teams.
Yep.
You get to see, you know, the concussion protocol. You get to see the war room. Mm-hmm. You get to see just how things happen, you know. you know, when you're not, you know, the parts of the time you're not usually paying attention to.
Exactly. I will say I felt there's like a little bit of fluff in the show in terms of like showing the Christmas parties or like the skates with family. I mean, that's not bad, but I mean, I would have been fine with just 5 more minutes of each game that they were showing that week, you know, like just more, more of what was going on the ice. Yeah, I feel like that was more to kind of get the casual fan, you know, to kind of get this,
that's not for people like us. That's right. For the people who are, you know, starting to be hockey fans or who might, you know, that I can see that definitely being an appeal to a group of people.
Sure.
So, I mean, it's like, you know, each episode was a full hour, so I mean, you had a lot of really good stuff in each one. So
yeah.
I don't think it took away too much.
No, but... me neither. I mean, this is a minor complaint. I mean, I thought the series was stellar. Now, the Winter Classic. So, that was also a very good episode, and it was just, they totally blew it out and just made it so cinematic, and that's what you want from a show like this. So,
you didn't have to do much to make the game cinematic. And I mean, that was,
I'm sure, again,
that was a crazy game.
As I say, again, this is probably an instance of when the HBO producers were just clapping excitedly because they knew this game was going to be gold. You know, like once they saw it, they knew it was just going to be television gold. And it was, especially the penalty shot with like, what, 25
insane.
Seconds
yes.
left or something.
You have Flyers down by a goal with 19 point something seconds left, and they get a penalty shot.
Right, and then it's playing the music from the Prometheus trailer in slow motion, you know, as Danny Briere's making his way down the ice.
Really, I mean, like Henrik Lundqvist was the star of that game.
Yeah.
I mean, he is just so damn good.
He really is. I mean, he makes me jealous. I mean, any team he's on is just going to always have a shot to get at least into the playoffs, if not further, because he's just so consistent, like night in and night out.
I mean, you saw the Flyers had so many chances in that game. Yep. It's just he was putting it away. And to his credit, Bobrovsky was too, for the most part.
He did. He was very solid, yeah.
He definitely held his own in there. I mean, the second goal, he really shouldn't have given up. But that third one, like, there was nothing he could do.
Right,
that,
I mean, cross
that one's
like
on
that.
The defense.
Yeah, I totally agree.
But, I mean, really, I think... You know, it was a great game. I mean, like, if that's, you know, the Winter Classic's going to draw an audience that most NHL games don't, and so you got a really great game for a group of people who might not watch it that often.
Right.
So I think that's really good for the sport.
Yeah, it was. It was just a very entertaining and exciting game. I know it hurts being a Flyers fan, but, it, you know, if you take a step back, like, I'm sure you... I mean,
really,
you can really appreciate it, you know?
It hurts less because the previous game, they beat Pittsburgh in Pittsburgh,
well,
so really, it was kind of gravy at that point.
Right, you hate Pittsburgh more than you hate New York.
Oh,
so,
yeah. Oh, definitely. I mean, they beat Pittsburgh in Pittsburgh with goals by Yager and Talbot. Really, what more could you ask for?
Oh, you know, that was something I really loved, too, was the... I don't remember who it was on the Rangers, but, you know, he scored, and then he did the Yager salute. And then it was interesting.
And then the Flyers players were like pissed at him for it.
It was
like, he's a legend. Don't you go after him.
Yeah, that was
really
great hearing that on the ice. And I hear them, you know, they couldn't believe that he had done that. And then they actually planned if they had scored another goal, which I wish they had just to see this, was they were going to do the gun thing that, that one of the Rangers players had done a few weeks earlier where he scored his first goal or second goal of his career. And he like turned his stick around like a gun and like fired at the goalie.
Yet another reason I wish they'd had the chance for that.
Yeah. I mean, how good would that have been to see?
Yeah. Really.
To see Hartnell like drop down to his knee and shoot at this, you know, shoot at Lundqvist or something like that.
Yeah. Really.
Yeah. But, I guess sort of in closing with 24/7, what do you think for next year? Because I read an interview that, you know, they might just do the Winter Classic yet again. You know, they haven't decided for sure, but one of the producers mentioned like that they'd like to do the playoffs. I don't know whether just the Stanley Cup playoffs or just, you know, all the different series in the playoffs in general.
I mean, that would be interesting. I mean, I don't know if the teams would be as willing to go along with it at that point.
Right. And that to me, that's the only hurdle. Especially,
but I mean, I'd love to see it.
Yeah,
I mean, I don't know that the teams are going to want to let people in that much during that period.
Right,
so.
Especially when series can last over a week long. I mean, you know, you don't want strategies to be given up for either your opponent then to see or your next opponent to see. You know, it's
right.
It does kind of that's the red flag there, I suppose.
As big as the Winter Classic is, it's just another regular season game happening right in the middle of the year.
Right.
So.
Exactly. So yeah, it doesn't. You know, it's not as meaningful. At all. It's the playoffs. But, yeah. All right. Well, I think that will just about do it. Did you have anything you wanted to add, JP?
Not really. I thought we covered everything.
Awesome.
You know, penguin sock.
There you go. Yeah, I didn't want to get into it too much, but of course the Flyers and the Blackhawks played the other night, and that was exciting and disappointing game all at once.
It was a heck of a game.
It was.
I didn't get to see much of it. I was studying at the time.
Oh,
but
okay.
It was entertaining. It was another one's back and forth.
Yeah, I mean, it very back and forth. I mean, the Hawks gave up 2 goals quick to the Flyers, and then with 3 minutes left, the Hawks get 2 goals real quick to tie it up, and then, of course, a late power play, and the Flyers win it with 30 seconds left. So I was hoping we'd at least get a point, but what can you do?
Yeah.
All right, well, thanks, everyone, for listening to Connectivity Hockey Night. We might just have to do this more often. It's pretty fun, so
yeah.
maybe come playoff time, get a little heated in here, and maybe we'll talk about that.
I would love to see that.
Yes. All right, well, thank you, JP, for joining me, and we'll see you guys later.
See ya.
This is gonna feel real good, alright? Most dope. Everybody please put a thumb in the air.
Hey.